Yeah, good morning, everybody. We've got a long day ahead of us with a full morning of scallops. I do have one announcement that we will break this afternoon promptly at 5:30. So no matter where we are in the agenda, that will be the end of our day. So we're going to move ahead with scallops, and Mary Beth and Dee, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This morning, we are scheduled to take final action on Framework 25. Last week was a busy week for scallops in Providence. Both the AP and the committee met. And I just want to thank committee members for making some special efforts to show up in bad weather. And it was we had to cancel several other meetings scheduled in other places, but the scallop committee did meet and take final action on Framework 25. And we do have a busy schedule, so I'm just going to turn it directly over to Deirdre, and she'll walk us through the framework. And so in your packet, I will note that we do have framework document number one, and everybody should have a copy of Deirdre's presentation.
Good morning. Thank you very much. We did hand out a paper copy of this presentation this morning, and there are copies for the public. And there are documents 1 through 8 also provided out on the table. I'm going to walk you through this presentation and probably pause about halfway through after I've done the background, and then we can go through the committee motions one at a time. As Mary Beth mentioned, the advisors and committee met last week and were able to get through everything. There were basically 5 outstanding issues that needed a little more attention and clarity, so we do have advice on all 5 of those issues, as well as preferred recommendations from the committee on every single action within the framework. So the agenda for today would be to consider those motions related to the outstanding issues, consider the preferred recommendations, and if there is time, you may recall back in November the committee met and there were 2 letters that they're requesting you consider send to the agency. If there's time at the end of the agenda today, we could pick those up because we ran out of time at the last council meeting, and you could consider those motions at this time. So I have a few background presentation slides, and I have come to the council in November as well as December to kind of run you through a lot of this information, so I will not repeat it again, but I just wanted to kind of refresh your memory of where we are with the scallop biomass results and how we set specifications in this fishery. Then I'll run through a few slides about the alternatives, of course, a very brief summary of the different analyses that the plan development team has prepared. There is a thicker document, I believe it's number 2, that includes basically all of the analyses we've prepared to date related to the different Framework 25 alternatives. Hopefully you've had that since the package and had a chance to kind of thumb through it. The list of 5 outstanding issues have been highlighted on the cover of the Framework 25 document. For the most part, they really are quite minor and do not require a lot of attention. It's just as the PDT was finalizing the framework, we noticed a few things that could use a little more committee and full council input. So those were highlighted, and as I mentioned, the committee does have recommendations for those 5 things, and I'll note them as we're going through the document. You may want to have the decision document handy as we're going through the discussion today. Document number 5 is just a summary table that includes the different decisions that are before you in this framework, as well as the final advisory panel and committee motions relative to the different subjects. So the background. Basically, since ACLs have been adopted for this fishery in 2011, in terms of the catch associated with the ACLs for this fishery, it has been performing quite well in terms of staying under the ACL set for the fishery in terms of catch. For each year, the fishery has been coming in roughly between 90% and 100%, or just under the ACL and not exceeding it. However, as we've mentioned in previous meetings and gone through some of the details, when the PDT goes back to re-estimate the when it comes back to re-estimate the fishing mortality, we do find that so far, for the most part, we've been underestimating the fishing mortality associated with these catch amounts. So as the slide explains in the center, while we use a target in the fishing the fishery management plan of roughly in the ballpark of 0.23 to 0.28 for the last few years. When we go back and reevaluate that, our updated F comes in, or the realized F comes in, quite higher, in some cases 20 to 30% higher than our target F levels when we set the specifications. So this is important to keep in mind when you're considering the different specification alternatives in front of you. When the PDT has gone and looked at this year by year, it seems that there are different things causing this each time. So basically, we're suggesting it's more than random error. The model is still definitely too optimistic. It's underestimating average catch rates as well as fishing mortality. Luckily, there is a benchmark assessment scheduled this spring and summer, so a lot of people will be really focused on this all summer, and you know, hopefully we'll be able to address this even better. But it's, again, just things to kind of keep in mind. So how are specifications set in the scallop fishery? In Amendment 15, the same action that set up annual catch limits, the plan development team and the council also looked at our overfishing definition. And basically what occurred in that Amendment 15 is we revised how we set fishing mortality targets. And now, since Amendment 15, basically the plan is under a hybrid system. If you were on the council at that time, you may recall that term. And the reason we call it a hybrid is that the reference points in terms of when the stock is considered overfished and overfishing remained the same as before in terms of what different F points are related to when the stock is overfished and what biomass levels are associated with those stock status determinations. What changed since Amendment 15 is the method we use for setting our target fishing levels. In the past, since Amendment 10 set area rotation in place, basically, if you have a bunch of closures in the ocean, those would be set at an F of zero, and then to compensate for that, you would increase the fishing mortality targets in other areas to compensate for those closures. So at the end, you would still have, you know, a similar overall fishing mortality target that was, you know, set below a certain threshold. However, under this hybrid approach, what we were finding before is we were setting the fishing mortality targets too high in open areas and potentially leading to growth overfishing. So this new hybrid system that's been used in the last few years in terms of setting fishing mortality targets instead puts a limit on how high you can put the fishing targets in open areas. And again, this is mostly to prevent excessive fishing in the open areas. We spent a lot of time, you may recall it, a few council meetings ago going through this. Very briefly, this flowchart, again, you've seen before. It's just kind of in here for your reference if you need it during the discussion today. Kind of shows you the system since Amendment 15 and how catch is divided in the scallop fishery. At the top, your OFL, there is a catch associated with that as well as a fishing mortality limit. And right now, it is 0.38 for this fishery, when the fishery is considered overfishing above that level. And it's important to keep in mind that this OFL includes everything, all scallops in the entire resource, whether it's open or closed, is captured within this OFL. When you reduce it down to ABC to account for scientific uncertainty, you'll see that drops down to 0.32 for this fishery and the associated catch related to that level. Again, this is trying to capture all those different issues and uncertainties about the stock. In this fishery, we do not have a difference between ABC and ACL. The only difference really is that we estimate the mortality from discards and incidental mortality. And we obviously remove that first before we would be setting the ACLs for the actual fishery. So once that estimate of discards is taken from the ABC, you're basically left with the amount available to the fishery overall. This is where we have a couple removals for set-asides in this fishery. There's an observer program that's funded through the fishery and allowing vessels to harvest additional catch to pay for observers. We also have a research program. This is where those different set-asides come off. And finally, an incidental catch permit is also removed at this level. Then finally, you have your ACL available to the directed fishery, which is divided between the limited access and the general category fleets. And that's where you see toward the bottom the split, and that's a 94.5% and 5.5% for the general category fishery. Finally, for the limited access side, again, everything I've just described is the entire resource, all areas combined. When we get down to the ACT, which is the actual target, what we set allocations based on, this is where it's only on the scallops that are available to the fishery. Obviously, we wouldn't be allocating access to things that are not open to the fishery. So the difference between the ACT and the ACL for the limited access fishery is where you get a sense of, first, the management uncertainty related in this fishery. There are some carryover provisions that you need to account for and provide a buffer for those types of management uncertainties, as well as the fact that there's a bunch of scallops that are either in closed areas or mid-Atlantic access areas in this particular case that are not available to the fishery. So that's where you kind of see that difference. In this year in particular, as we've been discussing, this buffer is a bit larger than in most years because there is so much of the resource within the mid-Atlantic access areas in this particular year compared to years past. So this is kind of how everything works in the directed scallop fishery. There are two things off to the sides up above, which you'll notice, state water catch, as well as the Northern Gulf of Maine ACL. We are required, of course, under Magnuson to account for these things and address them, but they are not within the resource area that's surveyed in this fishery. So there is, or there has been at least twice, a separate assessment of the Northern Gulf of Maine, the federal portion of the fishery in that area. So there is, not related to this directly flow chart, but there is a separate hard tack for that resource as well. So moving on, that's sort of the background in terms of how everything works in the scallop FMP. In terms of the specific specifications this year, again, we talked about this in December. The PDT essentially takes those directives that were set in Amendment 15 and how to set fishing mortality targets for this fishery, and we run off and try to figure out, well, how many days and how many trips does that come out to, working within those constraints of the fishing mortality targets in terms of it cannot exceed this much and so forth. So we did that and basically brought that to the committee several months ago as alternative two. And then it was expanded for alternative three. There's been some concern about the Delmarva access area in particular, and is it truly ready to be open or not in this coming fishing year? So alternative three is actually basically the same thing as alternative two, except it gives vessels a choice whether to use a Delmarva trip or fish in the open areas up to 5 days at sea. So we went on for a little while with these measures, and basically at the November council meeting, committee meeting, the committee was approached by the advisors to consider a few additional alternatives that would increase open area F, essentially, in a hopes to provide more catch in this coming fishing year. So it's essentially looking at that one aspect of our principles that set fishing mortality targets that basically constrains it at a certain level, at the FMSY level in open areas. These alternatives basically say, okay, temporarily for this fishing year, let's not use that constraint in the open areas. And alternatives 4, 5, and 6, I presented to the council in December, and you passed a motion to include them in this framework. So now, essentially, you have 6 specification alternatives, and they are identical for the general category fishery, because if you remember in this flow chart, the general category fishery comes straight from the overall ACL that is in the fishery in all areas. So that allocation remains the same under all of the specification alternatives. What varies between them is the ACT for the limited access fishery. And the major place that they're different is basically the number of days at sea awarded in each of the alternatives. Alternative 6 is a little bit different in that it keeps Delmarva closed. And the committee requested that we look into that, again, because of these potential concerns about that particular access area. So I just have a few slides that compare these alternatives. the most important take-homes, but there's a lot more information in document number two that goes through all of the different projections, and hopefully you've had a chance to kind of look through that. So very briefly, again, we did look at some of this in December in the preliminary estimates that the PDT was able to provide in December, but now we do have these more final estimates today. You can look at the projected catch column toward the center, and that basically gives you the take-home of how these scenarios differ. And you'll see they range basically from a little under 32 million pounds for the fishing year up to about 38 million pounds. And the strategy with the newer alternatives 4, 5, and 6 was to attempt to bring catch closer to 2013 levels, which the projected catch for 2013 was just over 38 million pounds. The PDT has been, tracking catch this year, and it does seem that total final catch will be probably above 38 million pounds, maybe closer to 40. Just to keep that in mind, final catch may be in that ballpark for fishing year 2013, but the actual projection last year was a little over 38. So you can see the estimated revenues associated with that catch. And, again, where the alternatives differ is the fishing mortality. So, overall, the total fishing mortality, as I mentioned before, which is all areas, including groundfish and habitat closures, is the total F column in the middle. And the way that the overfishing definition works is that we cannot set fishing mortality targets anywhere above 0.28. That's definitely the maximum that is, allowed under our FMP and in terms of setting the targets. So clearly all of the alternatives under consideration are well below the 0.28 maximum. The open area F does differ between the different alternatives, in terms of how many days at sea are awarded under each of the allocations. If you see alternative two, that one is completely consistent with our principles of setting fishing mortality targets where we don't set them above 0.38, which is the FMSY for this fishery. So that alternative that you'll see is the only one that has 0.38 as the target. Alternative 3 is a little bit higher than that, as I mentioned, because of that flexibility for the Delmarva trip. So what this is implying is that some vessels will actually opt to fish in the open areas instead, so you see that increased open area F. And then down the line, you'll see the open area F projections coming in higher based on how many days at sea are being allocated. Overall, the newer alternatives, 4, 5, and 6, do increase landings in the ballpark of 4 to 6 million pounds for 2014, depending on which alternative, and that has about $40 to $60 million compared to the basic runs, alternatives 2 and 3. So moving on in terms of, well, what does this mean beyond 2014? If we use this as what's been discussed at the committee level of increasing open area F temporarily above 0.38 to help basically stabilize landings from 2013 through 2015, there would be a needed reduction in days at sea in 2015 to account for this increase in 2014 to bring us back to our principles of keeping it at 0.38. So 2015, it's not as though days at sea are going to all of a sudden, recover and rebound up to these higher amounts. The models right now are estimating that under our normal conditions, alternative two, days at sea in 2015 would be 25. Days at sea. And so what you can see by increasing days at sea in 2014, there would be these associated reductions for 2015. For alternative four, for example, it's 2 days at sea less, and for alternative five, it's 1 day at sea less, and finally alternative six is 3 days at sea. And when you combine think about this impact in terms of these 2 years together, the document goes through a lot of discussion and analyses doing that to kind of think about this more than just 1 year at a time. And in addition, we even look at it over the next 15 years, not that these projections are going to tell us exactly what's going to happen in 15 years, but it helps you compare what the potential long-term impacts could be of this 1 year decision. So all of those numbers, I'm not going to read through them. You can kind of see the scale of the difference there. And basically, in the long run, alternative 3 does perform slightly better than all the other alternatives in terms of those long-term impacts. But it's minor if you think. I mean, it is £5 million and $30 million, but that's over 15 years. But it does perform slightly better than the rest. So in terms of, we talk about this a lot in the scallop fishery and at the committee level, what are the short-term risks and trade-offs associated with this? And so alternative 4 and 6, from all of the tables, they clearly result in the largest landings and revenues for 2014. But there are tables in the document. Specifically, I pointed one out here, table 8, which is in document 2, all of the analyses. It does show after that first year, those two alternatives do perform lower than all of the rest, basically that first year and beyond. In 2015, for example, and you see it immediately, basically, once you bring those days at sea back down to the 0.38 levels, those two alternatives in the very following year do have an estimate of $20 million lower revenue compared to alternatives 2 and 3, and then basically compared to alternative 5, it's about $6 million. So you do see that reduction pretty quickly, but that's sort of what we're balancing and what we're weighing right now in this framework. So that's basically your trade-off, and then to take it a step further, the committee also has been talking about, well, what is your real risk of doing this and exceeding FMSY in the open areas? And so we can look at the last few years and how we've been doing, and I mentioned this before, if you could think about it as, well, what if our total fishing mortality after making this decision is underestimated again, and what if it's underestimated 20%, which is what we have seen in some years in the recent past. So instead of having an overall F of 0.21, which is the F associated with alternative 4, you could think about, well, that could be 20% higher. And if it's 20% higher, it comes in at 0.25, but still that's comfortably lower than our 0.28. So in terms, again, as the total F, maybe this is not a major concern at this point, or a major risk. But where it does become a risk is the open areas, of course. If you assume that the catch is evenly divided between access areas and open areas, which in the next few years that is going to be the case most likely, and if you assume that we have a better control or handle on the access areas and that associated F comes in pretty similar to where we set it, then your open area F, in order to cause a 20% overage, would have to be underestimated by 40%. So this is where you start to get into a pretty uncomfortable place where, you know, if these underestimates continue and our open area F is instead 40% higher, then you're talking about 0.73, and that's a pretty high F in the open areas. So I'm making this point because right now all of our projections are saying alternative 4 would basically cost 2 days at sea. But that's assuming our estimates are correct. So it's important to keep in mind, if they're not correct, the cost in days at sea for 2015 will be more than 2 days. And people need to recognize that. I think that it's appreciated at the committee level that these are underestimated year after year. But it's not, you know, a promise that it's only going to be 2 days at sea. That's assuming that everything is correct. And just to give you a sense, every single day at sea in this fishery right now, in the recent times anyway, is about £1 million to the total fishery overall, with an associated $10 million. So this is a bit inflated, but in general, to keep in, you know, the math in your head, that's basically what a day at sea would be. So I took a little extra time with that because we really have been talking about this a lot at the committee level and wanted to bring some of that forward. So, again, there's not huge differences between a lot of these alternatives, particularly when you look at them over 15 years. Where they do differ is area swept, and this is where you get into the discussions of impacts on habitat and bycatch. Obviously, the more days at sea awarded to the fishery, it's more time that the gear is fishing on the bottom. And overall, the estimate of area swept, our models do provide an estimate of how much area, basically nautical miles squared, would be associated with each of these alternatives. And the basic run, alternative two, has an estimate of just a little over 2,000 nautical miles squared. Alternative four, you can see, is higher than that, about 2,800, alternative five, and so forth on the slide. And alternative six has the highest, basically 1,200 really nautical miles higher than alternative two. So this is kind of important in terms of your impacts on bycatch. And just overall, what I would say about area swept in this fishery, it has definitely been declining and declining quickly as we're reducing the number of days at sea in this fishery. You know, it was only maybe 2 years ago when we were above 5,000 nautical miles squared. So clearly, you know, this on an overall trend is definitely a reduction compared to even a few years ago. But there is a difference between the alternatives. So the PDT, in addition to this, we estimate how much bycatch of yellowtail and windowpane we're expecting related to the different projections to give basically for the analyses of the different scenarios. The 2014 projected catch of Georges Bank yellowtail, the numbers are difficult to see on the slide, but in general, basically all of the projections for all of the scenarios under consideration are projected to come in above what the sub-ACL is for Georges Bank yellowtail for this fishery. The slide shows you that for Georges Bank yellowtail, the scallop fishery sub-ACL is about 51 metric tons, and the PDT has provided a range of different projections for each of the alternatives. And the reason we gave a range this year is that we noticed a reduction, particularly in closed area two, of the bycatch rate from, we used basically 2012 data as well as 2013. And even though 13 is not finished yet, the bycatch rate was noticeably lower. It was about half for closed area two, which is potentially encouraging if it means that, you know, the fleet is staying away from the yellowtail better, or it's not encouraging if it just means the yellowtail are not there. So that's why we've provided this range. Basically, the lower number is based on 2013 rates, and the higher end is based on 2012 rates. So we felt it was important to show both because we're not sure, you know, of course, which rate is going to be more telling for 2014. So we've provided this range. Georges Bank, as I said, they're all over it. Southern New England yellowtail, some of them are over and some of them are under. And then windowpane, they are all, the projections are all comfortably below the sub-ACL for 2014. So in terms of all of this information, this slide here gets into, well, how have we actually been doing with our yellowtail projections, and how can we use this information? And I have said this many times when we bring these presentations to the full council and the committee, is that these projections, even more than some of our others, are very uncertain, and that's really because you're combining so many different things together that are moving in different directions potentially that lead to this uncertainty. So you have the uncertainty in the overall scallop assessment and biomass estimate, the different groundfish species estimates, you know, those projections. You have the uncertainty related to whether the observer coverage is, you know, completely reflective of the fishery. And then with the scallop FMP, we project forward where we think the fleet's going to be and how hard they're going to be fishing in different areas. And all of those things are uncertain. So when they're all combined, they certainly are uncertain. So what this table is trying to get at is, well, how have we been doing, keeping all of that in mind? And, you know, I don't think anybody would be, you know, betting the farm on any of these numbers. But the first column is the sub-ACL that's been awarded to the scallop fishery each year since the sub-ACLs have been in place. The second column there in the darker green is basically what our projections were at that time when the each year specifications were set. And then moving further to the right, it gives you what the final catch estimate was. Basically, on the regional office website, at the end of the year, they put in an estimate of what the final catch was for the scallop fishery. And finally, you can take just a simple percentage of what the final was compared to the projection. So when you look at these, Let's just look at Georges Bank first. You know, it looks like, hey, we've been under the projected catch, you know, over half every single year. But there are a lot of things going on related to that. In 2012, for example, that original projection was so high, and then, if you remember, we moved catch over from the scallop fishery over to the groundfish fishery, and there were a lot of different decisions that went on during these different years. But at the end of the day, the projections of catch for Georges Bank Yellowtail, anyway, have been below what was projected, the actual catch, I'm sorry. 2013 is not over yet, of course, so those numbers will potentially change in the final estimate. For southern New England, again, the more recent projections have been higher than the actual catches, but certainly not for the first year. The first year, that was way off. So you can look at these things and try to say, okay, well, let's look at our current numbers and apply something to kind of try to capture that these might be uncertain and maybe they are overestimates. And so the table below does that for you, but really I would take all of this information with a grain of salt since, again, the previous table does include our best estimate for this fishery in terms of the projection of yellowtail catches. So that's a lot of information. The last slide I believe I have in terms of background for the specifications is you do have a memo from the groundfish PDT. The scallop PDT has been having some conference calls with the groundfish PDT during the fall, and we have been showing these numbers and sharing these values with them, as well as the AM measures that we'll get to later. And you'll see in their memo that they have expressed some concerns about the fact that these projected catches in some cases far exceed what the sub-ACL is for next year. And they did kind of remind the council that the Georges Bank Yellowtail right now does have the lowest management uncertainty buffer associated with it. And finally, they did also point out that some of the southern New England yellowtails are also higher than the projections. So there's a lot of information there. The committee weighed all of these things as they considered their preferred alternative. And I'm going to probably pause if there's any questions, and then we can start working on the committee motions.
Thank you, Dee. Question, Chair?
Yeah, so I was trying to make heads or tails out of the yellowtail bycatch. And just tell me if I'm right. I think I have it right. So the estimate for the preferred alternative four, the low estimate is 64.2 on Georges Bank yellowtail flounder. Okay, so but that doesn't take into account how the fishery has actually performed this year. So taking the next page, the next slide, you were looking, so the 2013 sub-ACL for Georges Bank Yellowtails was projected was 85 tons, and they actually caught 35. Is that right, Deirdre?
Right, noting that the fishing year isn't over.
Right.
But it's definitely lower.
And but that 64 number, is that estimated the same way as the 85 number was?
Yes. Method is used. We just update it with updated observer data for that most current year. But the general method is the same.
And we don't have the avoidance gear that they're going of. I guess they have some new gear that they're going to be trying this year on window pane and yellowtail flounder. Is that right, to avoid them?
We may get into some of that this afternoon. I mean, sorry, later this morning, hopefully, about the window pane AMs. But, yes, there are some parts of the fleet that are experimenting with some gear, but it's not required. And it's in this action, we're talking about requiring it in the southern New England mid-Atlantic region, not Georges Bank. But there are the big change that happened this year was that the Georges Bank access area season changed. So that we're hoping would be one of the reasons that you might be seeing a lower bycatch rate. But it is has been just the 1 year, and we have to look at it a lot closer. But in terms of the gear, that I think you're talking about, that's going to potentially be a requirement more as an AM for the South and not the North.
Chairman Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The committee's preferred alternative would essentially stabilize the fishery in 2014, and in doing that, there are some trade-offs relative to the projected yields in the out years. And in 2015, you pointed out that there could be a reduction of a couple of DAS associated with that option. Do the 2015 projections that are being considered contemplate any increased access, for example, through the Habitat EFH omnibus to the northern edge? Is any of that imputed in those projections or not?
Thanks for the question. No. So the projections in this document assume that the habitat areas remain as they are for now. We would consider those kinds of adjustments and impacts on catch in a future action. So this document specifically does not say, okay, in 15 and 16, we're going to assume there's some amount of catch available to the fishery that's not available to it now. So the answer is no. These projections assume everything stays the same.
David. David Pierce.
Indeed, Rep. I continue to be impressed with all the numbers, all the analysis that's provided for all of these detailed options. So just a little bit of praise for all the work that goes into this, recognizing there's a lot of uncertainty, but still, this is rather amazing, continues to be amazing. My question is, in your slide showing a description of alternatives for 2014, alternative 1 through 6, when compared to 2015 likely results as a consequence of those alternatives, I noticed that for all the alternatives, we end up with a rather significant drop in days at sea from 2014 to 2015. So there's no stabilization in terms of days at sea that would be available to the fleet. With all those alternatives, it drops down dramatically, so I'm just confirming that, right? Okay, well, here's where I'm a bit confused, and I would appreciate some enlightenment. With alternative number 4, which is the preferred alternative of the committee, I see that catch is on the high, is the highest amount of catch of all the alternatives. And that gives us the highest amount of revenue in millions of dollars. Of course, we end up with an open area F of 0.52, which is above the maximum we're supposed to have of 0.28. But following through with alternative 4, I see in 2015, with a much lower days at sea from 38.5 to 23, we have a short-term revenue that seems to skyrocket from the $427 million in 2013, in 2000, and, about $427 million to $855 million, right? So what accounts for that dramatic increase in revenue, even though the days are going to be cut dramatically?
So, to answer, I think there's two things. The 800 value you're describing is actually 2 years combined, is maybe the first thing. So it's not a skyrocket and that's going to go from 1 year to the next and double. This table, I didn't take enough time to probably explain it when I went through it, is trying to show you some of the two-year, thinking about these things in a two-year idea. So that column is 14 and 15 together, trying to show you, okay, you have more catch in 14 and less catch in 15, but taking the 2 years together, this is how you can compare the alternatives. There's a table you may want to look at, David, in document 2, that shows you the catch and revenue by year separated out. If you want to take more time, it's table 8 and table 11. In document 2, that kind of shows you it 1 year at a time. I mean, I could show it many different ways, but this particular slide is trying to get at the difference or thinking about it at 2 years at a time. What is not clear also in this table is that access area catch is going to change a lot in 2015. It's going to increase. And so a lot of this total revenue that you're seeing and total landings is coming from access areas, which all of these alternatives have the same assumption about access areas. For example, Elephant Trunk, we hope, will open in 2015 with a decent amount of catch coming out of there. So while the days at sea are going to drop from, you know, most likely 30 or something down to 25 or lower, you're not going to see an associated huge drop in total catch because the access areas are going to provide more in 15 basically than they are providing in 14.
Okay, so the $855 million is basically a sum of 2 years, 2014 and 2015 combined. So 2 years of about $420 million. Okay, thanks for that question.
But yeah, if you'd like to look at that table 8 and 11, you can see it each year and see those annual effects.
Other questions for Dee? John.
Thanks, Dee, for the presentation so far. I have a comment. It has to do with, I guess, scale. And it's a point I think we're aware of. I just want to underline it. You talked a little bit about the yellowtail issue, which is one of the ways that the scallop industry intersects with the groundfish industry. And I'm just constantly struck by the scale of scallops and groundfish fleets. As I look at the description of revenues, alternative, the difference between estimated revenues in alternative 3 and 4, the difference between revenues of $364 million versus $427 million, the difference between revenues, that's the entire revenues of the groundfish fishery. Just the difference between two alternatives, the difference between two alternatives in the scallop fishery is the entire revenue of the groundfish fishery, the difference between two. Or in another way to look at it, as Dee mentioned, each day at sea is about 1 million pounds or $10 million. As we had to calculate the losses suffered by the groundfish fishery to report them to the Appropriations Committee, 2 years' worth of losses was about $27 million, 3 days at sea. It strikes me, and I celebrate and continue to celebrate the success of the scallop fishery. It is something everyone deserves credit for. But the magnitude of difference is just, it continues to strike me how different it is. They intersect with yellowtail. They intersect at my home port of New Bedford on the docks. The magnitude of the difference is so amazing.
Other questions for Dee? Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smallwoods, Fishery Survival Fund. I have two questions for Dee. Great job. Regarding southern doing yellowtail, we have an option in the document for a 7-row apron for everything west of the turtle line. Did you do an analysis on how that would reduce the yellowtail bycatch in 2014?
In terms of, is that included in the projection? The answer would be no for southern New England. The only analysis I have readily available would be the impacts of a 5-row apron. I'm sure I could talk to you if you have something more specific about seven rows, but no, currently the document does not have that included in these numbers.
And that will be significant. The data was previously presented in the 2011 report from the seasonal bycatch survey. So we do have that data, and it will contribute quite a bit to reducing southern New England yellowtail. My second question is in the background information on how the scallops are allocated. We have an OFL of 30,000 metric tons. You remember what the total biomass was? It's like 113,000. So the total biomass is 113,000 metric tons, and the ACT for the limited access fleet is 12,000 metric tons on this table, roughly.
Yeah, that one is for alternative two, I believe, which was our original.
So,
but there are ACTs for each of the alternatives on the last
so
page of the decision document. The preferred, give me a second, I can find it on here, hopefully. It's in that ballpark. It's probably a little higher because it's higher days at sea.
I just want to point out, because yesterday during the monkfish conversation, I think Tom had mentioned that the difference between the OFL for monkfish and the ACT was about, you know, half. Well, you could see in this particular case in the scallop fishery, it's even greater than half. We're operating at about 10% of harvesting the total biomass per year. We're at an extremely conservative low level for stability purposes. So I just hope that everybody keeps that in mind. I mean, numbers are excellent, but they're an aid to reasoning. There's a lot of non-quantifiable aspects here. We're fishing at a very low level in the scallop fishery, and we're at one of the historic low points, and we see from this point forward tremendous increase in biomass occurring out there, both in the Mid-Atlantic and on Georgia's Bank. So I just hope that everybody just keeps that in mind, where we're fishing in this fishery.
Sorry, I just have the number, Terry. The ACT for alternative four is 17,254 metric ton.
Are there any other questions from the audience? Back to the council. Terry.
So you had mentioned 2015. Can you just kind of, what are they going to be doing in 2015? I can remember something from November, or maybe it was even September, that the effort's going to shift to the south in 2015, so the yellowtails should be less of a problem.
Sure. So we don't focus a lot on it in this action since we'll be looking at all of this again next year for 15, but the models and in terms of the survey results we had from 13, it appears as though the access areas in the Mid-Atlantic, we're hoping, will be available for a decent amount of access next year. So that would mean in the ballpark of maybe three access area trips, maybe two in Elephant Trunk and one in Delmarva, you know, provided everything looks okay from the surveys that are conducted this year. So you would be looking at an increase in access areas in the Mid-Atlantic, and then it's possible there may be a portion of an area available in closed area two. So there would be some Georges Bank yellowtail potentially in the mix that following year. As you can see, the days at sea, as has been discussed, will not be in the ballpark of what we're discussing now for 15. It would be lower. But sorry, just to continue if I can. But the projections do, there are small scallops in the Mid-Atlantic access areas, and we believe there are small scallops in the open areas as well in the Mid-Atlantic. And so as they grow, we do think in general there would be a shift of open area fishing from the north, you know, down to the south in the coming years.
Are there any further questions? Seeing none, it's back to you, Mary Beth.
So in Dee's presentation, you can see that this is the background material, and now we will move on to decision-making. And I think I'll let Dee kick that off. I do have nine committee motions, two consensus statements by the committee. And if you look at the decision document, which is number five, you'll also see that the AP motions are attached as well. Peter Hughes is the AP chair. He's here today, as are a number of AP members. So if people have questions of them, I'm sure they'd be happy to weigh in. And so I believe Dieter would be at slide 14, and I'll go back to Dee for a minute.
Thank you, Mary Beth. Yes, if I start again with slide 14, before we get into the actual motion the committee has for their preferred recommendation, there were of outstanding issues that we also needed to look at, and hopefully these are minor, as has been mentioned. But a little clarity from the committee on what the default measure should be. As we've been saying, this is a one-year action, but we do want to set a default to have in place for when March 1, 2015 comes. And so the PDT is recommending, as in similar years, that it be 75% of the projected days at sea for 2015. So depending on what alternative is selected, it would be 75% of those projected days at sea for the limited access fishery. And then, as we have done in early previous years as well, we do 100% of the general category IFQ allocation, and that's the recommendation from the PDT, and where the committee agreed, and so did the advisors. You can see motion number one. Maybe I'll just do all three of these together. The second thing that the PDT wanted the committee to clarify is that for alternatives 3, 4, and 5, there has been flexibility added. And this is something that we haven't done before, but basically because of this concern about Delmarva and whether or not it was going to be a fruitful access area trip or not, there was this desire to try to find as much catch as we could, basically, at the PDT, because we were, you know, seeing this reduction the fishery was facing. So we looked at Delmarva, and basically it was discussed that there could be some fishing in there, but maybe rather than allocating the entire fishery a trip and, you know, sending everyone there, a more conservative thing perhaps for the area would be to give them a choice. And so you could fish in there, or you could fish 5 open area days at sea instead. But what we didn't clarify along the way is that should this flexibility be available for part-time vessels as well? So the advisors and committee had a pretty long discussion about this and looked at the numbers in more detail. And I would say, in summary at the end, people were supportive of providing this flexibility. But to just note, to make sure people understand, a part-time vessel in the limited access fishery is awarded basically 40% of what a full-time vessel is awarded. For that's the difference between the two permit types. And it's 40% of the days at sea and the access area trips. So when you look at the full-time vessels, they're going to be getting 2 trips at 12,000 pounds each. And so 40% of that is 1 trip at 9,600 pounds. So, and these vessels get to choose, because it's 1 trip only, they get to choose which of the 3 access areas to take that trip in. So after a pretty long discussion, the recommendation from the committee before you is basically, okay, these vessels have a choice of where they want to take this trip. They do not have to go into Delmarva. So in this case, maybe the flexibility is not as needed. And when we were looking at the numbers, in some cases, the efficiencies are very different between some of these vessel classes. So to really provide the same possession limit in the open areas compared to the access areas, you potentially would have to come up with a pretty complicated day-at-sea conversion that would vary by permit category, full-time small dredge, full-time, you know, 2 dredge. And so in the end, the committee is recommending that these vessels not have this flexibility choice, and instead the flexibility comes in that they get to choose the area. Just to let you know, from the committee meeting, I did look and find that there are about 30 part-time vessels. We were discussing this. And of the 30, about 25 of them are from the Mid-Atlantic. We had a question at the committee level about this. Most are from North Carolina and New Jersey. So the issue of, you know, we were not sure of how many of these people would even use the Delmarva trip. Most of them are home-ported closer to Delmarva. And then finally, there are some details. Because this is new, the PDT wanted to clarify a few things about what vessels would need to do about Delmarva. And so there's been some text that's been drafted, and the committee has a consensus statement, which probably doesn't require a motion. It's just to clear the record and explain to the industry so they're aware of how this program would work. since it's a new idea. And those are on page 23 if you want to see, and the committee has a consensus statement to support that text.
So thank you, Deirdre. And as Deirdre pointed out, the consensus statement basically is the mechanics of how this is going to work. The agency really needs some clarification, and the committee talked through it. So I don't think I need to go into any detail on the consensus statement. It is in the document. And to the discussion about the part-time limited access converting Delmarva trips, we did have some input from the AP, and part of and we spent a bit of time on it, and part of the reason we came to the conclusion that we did was we had people who said, well, the flexibility is interesting, but it's getting complex, and quite frankly, they didn't seem to think they would use it. And so to add that into the document for feedback that we were getting was that their flexibility really was in choosing which area to go in. So that's kind of just a little bit of background on that discussion. So I will make the first motion on behalf of the committee. And one other thing I would note, that the committee motions, all of the nine that I bring forward were unanimous. So the first motion on behalf of the committee is to, if I can find it, accept the AP consensus statement related to the default measures for fishing year 2015. Committee motion.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second. Council comments. Are there any comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Okay. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 16-0.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm quite remiss. I just realized something. It was this final action on scallops, and I didn't give it a thought this morning. So I just wanted to let everybody know that I will be recusing myself on final action on scallops because the company that I work for has an interest in a processing entity that processes greater than 10%, which is the limit for a conflict of interest. So just to clarify that.
Thank you, Mary Beth. So the motion carries 15 with one recusal.
Thank you very much. So, David, would you want to provide any additional background on our motion number three?
Sure. All I really have done is, if you go to the next slide, it basically describes the committee's preferred alternative and provides the motion. I verbally do have some general committee rationale for the motion, but certainly if I don't touch on everything, the committee can add to it. But for this first, the motion three is related to what the preferred alternative should be for the specification. In general, some of the meeting notes I had from last week is that, as have been mentioned again today, there are trade-offs. But in general, for the committee, it was important to make the 2014 fishing year work and to kind of provide that stability for the agent, for the fishery. There were some concerns expressed about localized overfishing in the open areas. Kind of an emphasis that this does need to be temporary, this idea about increasing F in the open areas in these, you know, unusual circumstances. And the final point maybe that I had in my notes is that we do have a pretty high confidence that there are scallops in the bank, if you will, in the mid-Atlantic access areas. There's a lot of survey results suggesting that there is quite a bit off the table for 14. And I think that gave people some confidence about fishing harder in the open areas this year compared to what the level would maybe need to be the following year. Those were kind of the general rationale points I picked up from the committee meeting.
So thank you, Deirdre. On behalf of the committee, the scallop committee recommends alternative 4 in section 2.1.3.4 is preferred for framework 25 specifications.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second. Council comments. Terry?
Yeah, I was kind of uncomfortable until I heard your presentation, and I had spoken to a few people this morning about the yellowtail catch. And I think that I think they're going to be under their allocation next year with all the avoidance programs and the new gear technologies and stuff. So I'm comfortable voting for that. So I'm going to be supporting it.
Tom?
Yeah, on the same point, I guess
before we do vote, I'm not necessarily opposed to the motion, and I understand Terry's points about the projections, but I think we should probably walk through the AMs and potential impacts for the groundfish fishery and how a potential and perhaps predictable overage of the yellowtail sub-ACL and the scallop fishery would sort of go work through the process, both with the TMGC AMs and potential impacts on the groundfish sub-ACL in future years. I don't know who that question is directed to, but if, say, the high end of this yellowtail projection is actually accurate for alternative four and we result in a yellowtail overage, how would that impact the groundfish fishery in future years, and how would it impact our discussions with TMGC?
Okay, I think we're going to need Jamie and Sarah and Tom to answer that question. Sarah Heil, can you talk about the TMGC?
So, as far as the U.S.-Canada agreement is concerned, if the overall ACL is exceeded, then the subcomponent that's responsible for their ACL being exceeded will have a pound-for-pound payback in the next year. So if the scallop fishery stays under, but the groundfish fishery goes over and the overall is exceeded, it's the groundfish fishery that would have to have that pound-for-pound payback. If the overall ACL is over and the scallop fishery is over, the groundfish fishery didn't cause the overage, the scallop fishery would have that pound-for-pound payback. There's also AMs that would be triggered, and they depend on the percentage of overage, and they also depend on whether the overall sub-ACL was exceeded. And those result in this for the scallop fishery with area-based AMs based on the percentage. Your other question about the impacts on the groundfish fishery, certainly if the groundfish fishery stays below its said ACL and the scallop fishery goes above its ACL, the impacts would be minimal. If the groundfish fishery and the scallop fishery stays under, there's also the possibility that some of that Georges Bank yellowtail would roll over into the groundfish fishery. So it really depends on what the overall subcomponents are doing in the next year, and also whether or not the scallop fishery can maintain its level of bycatch underneath that sub-ACL.
Tom?
Just to follow up, and it looks like Tom has something to say on that. How do those area-based paybacks or the pound-for-pound payback, how does that work with shifting harvest patterns in the scallop fishery? So my sense is that we're not going to be spending too much time on Georges in the next few years. So how does a payback work if the fishery likely isn't spending much time in that area anyhow?
Tom?
Well, I think there's a couple pieces here to keep in mind. The first is that, and Deirdre will probably have to jump in on the specific question about how it works with the different areas, but generally the scallop fishery AMs are probably not triggered in the immediately following year. They're probably triggered in the second year after. That's because of the data issues. So if the scallop fishery were to have a pound-for-pound payback in this is where we kind of get lost. This is where I'm turning to Deirdre. If there's a pound-for-pound payback for the overage in year two, they may not actually have any AMs implemented in year two other than that. That's correct?
So, right, I think if the overage is in 14, if the data is not available, which it may not be, it would be 16, would be there would be less ACL, pound-for-pound reduction for the scallop.
The pound-for-pound payback right. Under the U.S.-Canada has to happen in the immediately following year. So and we monitor that through the TMGC. So the scallop fisheries sub-ACL would be reduced in 2015, but their AM for the overage in 2014 wouldn't be triggered until 2016 in all probability due to the data limitations. So I think it's important to note that, you know, this is a pretty high standard. The overall ACL has to be exceeded, or 150% of the scallop ACL has to be exceeded. But there could be cascading effects of these AMs for several years.
Just a follow-up on that point. So since there won't be an AM in place for the scallop fishery in the event of an overage, and we do have to pay back in that following year per the U.S.-Canada agreement, where does the pound-for-pound payback come out of? The overall sub-ACL is reduced, and that comes out of the groundfish fishery.
No, the overall sub, the way we changed it in Framework 48, I think 48, maybe 50, is that the overall sub-ACL, the overall quota is reduced for the payback, and it comes out of the group that caused the overage. So the scallop fishery sub-ACL would be reduced in 2015 if they were the ones who caused the overage. If the groundfish fishery caused the overage, their sub-ACL would be reduced in 2015. And I think what you're struggling with here is that if the scallop fishery goes over in 2014 and their sub-ACL is reduced in 2015, there's an immediate impact on the groundfish fleet because their sector quotas are reduced, which immediately constrains their activity in 2015. Somewhat questionable what happens to the scallop fishery. If their sub-ACL is reduced in 2015, but their AM doesn't get triggered until 2016, there's a time lag there between when their sub-ACL is reduced and when the AM gets put in place.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think the language when referring to the AM, it's, as Tom indicated, it's a data issue for implementing these in year three. But because this is such a high-profile issue, and we've actually done a lot of work to get this data in a more timely manner, specific to Yellowtail, there's also a closure for a closed area 2 that begins on August 15th and goes through November 15th. So at the regional office, we feel like around that time, around August 15th, we'd have a pretty good idea if we were going to go over this sub-ACL. We could take a look at that, and if there's going to be a significant overage, we could probably implement we could implement an AM in year two. So if there's a slight overage, we only go over by a few metric tons, we might not know that until later on in the year, and that would be a year three implementation. But if it's going to be egregious, we would probably know at a point in the year where we could do a year two implementation for an AM.
You all set, Tom?
Just one follow-up question on that point. Would that require council action, or is that at the discretion?
It's fine, yeah.
Laura.
I think it's really important to have out on the table what the accountability measures would be and what the payback would be so that we are all voting with a clear mind. I do want to point out that if we look at what's been caught in the scallop fishery to date, with 8 weeks left in the fishing year, it's 42.4% of the sub-ACL and 61% of the sub-ACL this year before the gear modifications have put in place. And then I also look over at the yellowtail harvest by the groundfish fishery, and again, significantly under the quota with about, or under the ACL with about 12 weeks left to go in the fisheries. So, again, I think it's important to understand the impact on the groundfish fishery, but we should also live in reality. And as Ron was trying to point out, we have huge buffers already in this fishery. And while yellowtail is certainly important, it just doesn't seem likely that we should constrain the fishery further given the reality of what's happening on the water based on the numbers that I'm looking at least. Thank you.
Anybody else from the council? Anybody from the audience? Back to the council. Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to comment on the alternative itself, that is alternative 4. As we discussed at length in the committee, There are trade-offs among the options in terms of what their effects are on the future yields in the fishery. But I think the trade-off in this case is worth making in order to try to stabilize landings coming into 2014, given the fact that the 2013 specifications reflected about a 30% decrease from the 2012 performance in the fishery. Some of that has been offset by price effects at the landings level, but certainly in terms of the total volume for the fishery, it's down very significantly. I think it is also worth noting that the potential to convert the Delmarva trips into open area DAS is a good one, because we have had some concerns about making sure that we preserve those opportunities in the out year, in the out years for the performance in the Mid-Atlantic, given the fact that there are significant recruitment events that have been shepherded through the system in those areas, and one of those is Delmarva. And it's a little bit early for Delmarva, but given the fact that there's a conversion opportunity to convert those to open area DAS, and the total projected F is still well below the ABC, I think it's an appropriate trade-off to make at this point.
Are there any final comments? John.
I note this motion was made in committee by John Quinn and Laura Ramsden. Here I am again agreeing with Laura Ramsden. This is history in the making. Look at this. I know there's risk in this, but I also know that the industry's done an awful lot of work on yellowtail avoidance, and it's been successful. As Laura said, the results show that. And I know that this in committee has been seen as a bridge year to get to next year. As they move next year, there's going to be grounds with less yellowtail and more revenues. And so I think this is acceptable risk. And so we're supportive. Nothing's without risk, but this seems acceptable risk. And so we're supportive of this alternative.
John Quinn.
Things seem to be going so well, so I'm a little reluctant to speak on behalf of the motion, but I support it as well, just based on, really to echo the sentiments of the previous couple of speakers. There is risk. This comes on the heels of a 30% reduction from 2012, so I think we're all going into this with our eyes open, and we think it's going to work out, but I think it's we're clear what the balancing act we're doing.
Any further comments? Okay. Seeing none, those support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 15-0-0 with one recusal. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, Deidre, perhaps you want to cover the next two motions together in the background information. As has been stated, we have a lot of small scallops out there. It's been confirmed several years in the surveys, and there was a major discussion at the committee about what do we need to do to protect, or some measures that could be considered to protect small scallops. So the next two motions are relative to that conversation.
Thank you. I'm going to pick up on slide 16. And this is decision two, related specifically to Nantucket Lightship. And the committee included and the council agreed to have an option potentially for any of the trips that are allocated to Nantucket Lightship should there be basically a line drawn so that trips had to be taken north of 40 degrees, 40 and a half degrees north. And the idea here is that from this figure you can see this is a plot of the adult scallops on the top, from the VIM survey that did a pretty detailed grid of this area. And the distribution of larger scallops is definitely more concentrated north of 40 and a half. And the plot below are smaller scallops, basically ones that would pretty much pass through the dredge down below. And you'll see that's higher concentrated. There is a table as well, that we, you know, basically simply calculated the percentage of the adult scallops found on the north compared to the south. And, you know, looking at these numbers, it does seem as a pretty low cost to in fact, constrain the fleet to fish in the north. Only to protect this potential recruitment. As we mentioned at previous council meetings, this was a very large event, broke all kinds of records in terms of the numbers of scallops collected. However, at the AP and committee meetings last week, a lot of points were made about, you know, because it's an access area, there's really no economic incentive for vessels to stay in an area that do not have a decent concentration of large scallops, so they would just move. So it would almost self-regulate. And unless there's a really important reason to draw a line in the ocean, most of the people having the conversation last week felt that it wasn't valid to do it because vessels would just move, in fact, and not stay on small scallops because there is that higher price for larger scallops. So that was, in general, I would say the main rationale provided. In addition, points were made that these scallops were very small when they were seen in the survey. We're not as sure about their survivability, and there will be surveys this year to kind of go back and check on these. The PDT originally supported this line in general development of it because it didn't seem like a high-cost situation and that most of the effort more typically probably will occur north of this line anyway. There's not a lot of effort being allocated to this area overall, so the concerns are not really high either way. I think people were a little concerned about the precedent that it might set in terms of further constraining where vessels could take their trips would probably summarize the rationale. Just jumping to decision three. This is actually committee motion five. In addition to this boundary, we also developed in this framework a handful of measures that would further reduce mortality on small scallops, both in Nantucket and Delmarva. We've been talking about this a few times today, and this list was developed as a way to kind of, again, on a one-year thing. This is not an idea that we would do this all the time, but because of the situation where we have potentially a lot of small scallops around, to do as much as we can to reduce mortality, there's alternatives in here to prohibit RSA compensation fishing. A lot of times when a vessel is awarded compensation, it's up to over £1 million now, and that's becoming a decent percentage of the total catch. If, for example, you have an access area that's close to shore, it's a prime candidate to do this fishing, and if the fishery overall is not really accessing that area too much, to throw another £1 million coming out of that area can do potentially harm for the future. So this would be a one-time idea to prohibit any RSA compensation fishing in either access area for next year. In addition, coming from the advisors, there was an additional suggestion to impose a season for Delmarva. Again, trying to get at the idea of concentrating effort at a time when the yields are higher, so you would be killing fewer animals for the same amount of possession limit. So they did identify originally even a two-month window that was later expanded to 3 months by the committee to kind of give people a little bit more time. And so this was, again, endorsed by the committee as preferred. And finally, a crew limit. Again, a few years ago, we got rid of the crew limit in access areas, the idea being that it's a possession limit. They don't need a crew limit if they want to bring an additional crew onto the platform for training or other reasons, then that could occur in access areas. So that elimination is currently on the books. There is no crew limit for access area trips. This idea would be a temporary bringing back of the crew limit for Delmarva in an interest to potentially reduce if these scallops end up being a lot smaller than we think, and there's a potential for high grading, having an additional crew member on there or two, we would impose this for 1 year to kind of try to minimize that additional mortality potential. So the committee ended up looking at this list, and based on the AP recommendation, they are suggesting alternatives 2 through 5, all of them, 2, 3, 4, and 5, be part of the preferred alternative, again, to help reduce mortality on these smaller scallops for the future.
So thank you, Deirdre. So obviously the committee considered a number of things on protection of recruitment in small scallops, and in one instance makes a recommendation for no action, and in the other instance chose all of the alternatives available. So on the Nantucket Lightship. This is called Committee Recommends No Action for Section 2.1.3.7, No Restriction on Fishing Location Within Nantucket Lightship Access Area. Committee motion.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second. Council comments. David Pierce.
Yeah, this is for Deirdre. The spatial distribution of the small scallops, the adult scallops that you showed, and the table that shows recruits versus adults, that data, that spatial distribution, is from the survey that was done in 2013. When in 2013 was that survey done?
I can look in the document to see if it's described. I think it was the spring of 13 for Nantucket Lightship.
Okay.
I'll page through, but it's current. It's definitely recent. I believe it was the spring. It could be the summer, but I'll look.
Okay. I guess my question then is that since a year will have gone by and these scallops, these recruits are growing, yes, they're small, but now they're bigger than they were when the survey was done back in the spring of 2014. So if that's the case, then would there be incentive for the fleet to fish on those scallops? They're not the biggest scallops, of course, not the most valuable ones, but my question is, wouldn't they be of a size where they would be of market value and profitable for a trip? Because if that's the case, they're still small, and I wonder whether the line should actually be considered to protect the smaller scallops and keep the fleet in an area where the larger ones would be found.
Thanks for the question, David. Within Framework 25, Document 1, on page 32, there is an additional figure I didn't have in the slides, but Figure 5 does describe the length frequency distribution of all the scallops that are found in all of those stations. The survey was in June of 2013, and basically what you see from this figure, and I could put it up on the screen if people aren't with me, Document 1, page 32, is that the vast majority of these smaller scallops are very small. And you can see the lengths right now, granted this was June of 2013, was, 20 to 30 millimeters, 20 millimeters. So, yes, they will grow, but they will definitely not be anywhere near being harvestable in the gear. There is another bump, another year class, around 50 to 60, that, again, you're correct, they will grow, but certainly not the fishery generally is targeting 100, 110 millimeters. So I think more of them would be caught, but not of harvestable size.
John Quinn.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up with what Deirdre said. At the committee level, several people from industry said that there would be no incentive because you couldn't retain that in the gear, so particularly with those percentages that you really wouldn't want. The second part was that at least I was very reluctant to temporarily close areas or draw lines that may or may not exist for the next many years. So I think there was a great reluctance by some committee members not to start. This is kind of a closure, not to start doing closures when there's really not an incentive to go into that area.
Terry?
Yeah, I think that this will probably key it into our groundfish discussion this afternoon. There's really no incentive to go fish on small fish or small scallops or small anything because the value isn't there. I mean, they're worth way less than anything. So, I think we all need to bear that in mind when we're making our decisions on everything that we regulate. So.
Any other comments from the council? Any comments from the audience? Yeah.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Everybody captured it very well. John, thank you.
Peter, you want to put your name on the record?
I'm sorry. Peter Hughes, Atlantic Cape Fisheries, Cape May, New Jersey. The only other thing to say is that the industry stakeholders are very risk adverse, and we have a very long-term future of our fishery, and we cherish that. We perform a number of scallops, and we perform a number of surveys that the industry funds on a yearly basis. We're going to be surveying that area south of Nantucket again this spring or this fall. And we're going to work on Framework 26, which we can take action in Framework 26 if need be. We don't necessarily need to do that right now. One of the bits of information that was on the previous slide was the percentage of recruited scallops to the industry, and I think it was 5%.
That's closed. That would be closed.
That would be closed. It's 4%. 4% of that area has scallops that would be viable for the industry, and nobody's going in there for anything like that. But it is going to be surveyed again, and we can take it up with Framework 26. Thank you.
Anybody else? Back to the council. Okay. Seeing those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 15-0-0 with one recusal. Mary Beth.
Okay, moving on to decision three and committee motion five. The alternatives are found on page 32 and 33. Committee motion, the Scald Committee recommends alternative 2, 3, 4, and 5 as preferred.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Are there any comments from the council? Are there any comments from the audience? Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. I hate to interfere with the love fest, but I just have to put my objections to one portion of this motion on the table just for the record. This has a closure in the Demelver area in August. So it's basically taking a nine-month fishing season from June, when we think the plan will go into effect, until the following fishing year, and compressing it into a three-month fishing season, in my view, one of the worst times of year for a southern fishing access area. It's the 9 months, 4.5 months that we're closing this area are times when there's no sea turtles in that area. We are opening the area for three of the hottest months of the year, when we're going to have the highest on-deck mortality associated with the fishery, and conceivably high incidental mortality on the seafloor in comparison to the winter months due to higher predation. The only reason we're doing this is because the meat weights in the fall decrease. For 35 years, we've understood that, but we haven't closed fisheries, the scallop fishery, during the winter months for the purposes of the meat weight difference, because time and time again we understand that it's better to spread out the fishing effort, probably not just for the biological reasons of having too much effort in a small area at one time, but also for the market reasons. The boats that are going to be going into this area, many of them are smaller boats, and a lot of them might save their trips to November, December, January, when the price is going to be a lot higher than in the middle of the summer when everybody's fishing on top of this one area. I don't think that by keeping it open 9 months versus 3 months is going to increase the fishing in the area. So I just do not believe that an August closure is appropriate for this area. And that's my 2 cents. Thank you.
Other comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Dee.
The only other point I was sitting here remembering that came up at the committee that may be useful for the full council, too, the advisors discussed that issue a lot as well and had similar thoughts on some of those cases. But one thing, there is in the scallop plan a broken trip provision. And so the main driver of why this season was recommended was, in fact, to allow the scallops to grow that one last growth before access. Yes, in the fall, those things start to decline and the yields reduce. But if fishing is not as great as we hope it is in Delmarva, and we have this, you know, we're kind of on the fence about Delmarva, there is a broken trip provision that if a vessel starts a trip in the last 60 days of the fishing year, that if this is, in fact, adopted, and that would be basically July or August, the last 60 days that the area is available to them, if a broken trip is taken, then the vessels are allowed under the regular broken trip provisions to then finish that trip in the first 60 days of the following fishing year, which would basically be March and April of the following year. So it is possible, and we heard from some part-time vessels that are maybe more likely to use this area, that they would very seriously consider that and fish those trips in the following March and April as well.
Thank you for that. Are there any further comments? Ellen.
I just have a point of clarification. The way this is written, it says limit fishing in Delmarva from June 1st to August 31st. You could read that either way. You could read, to me, I read this, the first time I read this, it looked to me like you were opening it June 1st through August 1st. You are. Okay, you could. Okay, Ron just said it was closed during August. Okay.
He meant after August. Right.
Thank
so it would be 3-month opening, and then it would close for the remainder of the fishing year, which is through February, and then March 1, 15 would come, and potentially those broken trips could occur in March and April of the next fishing year.
Thank you.
David.
Yeah, part of this motion is alternative 2, which is prohibit the 2014 RSA in the Nantucket Lightship area. And here's where I get a bit confused, because the decision relates to additional measures to reduce mortality on smaller scallops. So why would we be concerned that there would be mortality on smaller scallops in that area if vessels wouldn't be fishing on the smaller scallops anyways? I can understand concern about increased mortality on the larger scallops, the marketable scallops. So, again, tying this to reducing mortality on smaller scallops just is not clear to me where that relationship is, so I'd appreciate some clarification.
Sure, David. I think the point with Nantucket Lightship and the RSA is a bit of an issue of scale as well. So the Nantucket Lightship area is not going to receive a lot of effort under the alternatives that were under consideration. Nantucket Lightship for Alternative 4 is only going to include 116 trips through the lottery system. That's the maximum amount of effort that's going to go on there. So that's about 600 metric tons of removals. So even though it's not a full trip, it's still technically open to the fishery. So any area that's open to the fishery could have RSA fishing occur in it. And that's actually 1.25 million pounds. And to have all of that potentially come from Nantucket could be an issue, and you would start fishing down those larger scallops. There's not that much in Nantucket Lightship, and there would, because it's an RSA compensation fishing trip, you can take your time and potentially fish in areas that you wouldn't have normally been fishing under your regular activities. Nantucket Lightship was open last year for RSA fishing, and we saw 75% of the entire RSA awards come out of there. So there's precedence that it's an attractive area. It's close to a lot of ports. It's close to New Bedford. So it's an attractive area for people to do RSA fishing from. So even if it's not, maybe the fishing is not as high as it could be in other areas, it's very convenient. So it is precautionary, and the same rationale, I guess, would apply that, well, they'll move if it's too small. But it's almost an add-on. A fishing RSA compensation trip is an add-on to their regular fishing year. So there are different incentives a little bit for those trips than regular fishing trips.
Okay, thank you. How are we defining smaller scallops? I'm looking at the figure you referenced in response to my earlier question, figure 5 on page 32. So what are we concerned about? What size of scallops should not be fished on in the Nantucket Lightship area through an RSA?
I think for the two areas it's different. Delmarva, excuse me, has several year classes that are in there, and the risk is higher, potentially, if you will, because they're almost catchable. So for Nantucket, as this figure describes, it's not exactly the same. They are a lot smaller in there. I think it's a lot to do not so much with the harvest of them, but the incidental impacts of the gear just towing around in that area. Why introduce that very likely amount of effort to come in Nantucket Lightship if you don't have to? So, again, I don't think I know the industry is not supportive of this all the time, but in an instance like this where it is an add-on, it's RSA fishing, they could go in open areas instead, granted maybe not be as profitable potentially, but maybe this is overkill and is not necessary and people aren't going to choose to go in here anyway because the scallops are smaller and maybe this isn't, you know, maybe this is additional and not necessary, but I think it's precautionary, and that's kind of where people probably ended up with it.
Are there any further comments? Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 15-0-0 with one recusal. Mary Beth.
So moving on to decision four, I think it'd be worthwhile for Dieter to give us a little background on this.
So I'm going to pick up on slide 19. Decision four was specifically included by the council to consider measures to address unused closed area one trips. Luckily, we're not in this position very often, and basically this would be trips that were allocated to an area. Projections didn't work out. Catch rates were very poor. Vessels were not able to make their trips. So the thought is, can we do something about that? This has happened one other time in the past. We had an issue with the Hudson Canyon access area allocation, and in a similar case, the catch rates just basically fell so low that the vessels were losing money by going. So originally we were looking at 2013, and in 2013, roughly 1.5 million pounds were allocated to the fishery from closed area one. And when we started looking into this more, closed area one was also an issue in 2012, not to the same degree, but there are some vessels that did not get their trips from 2012 either as those catch rates began to fall. So ultimately, the document was expanded to include potential measures for both 2012 unused trips as well as 2013 unused trips. Overall, as the slide shows, there's about 500,000 pounds left over from 2012 trips, and there's roughly 1 million pounds unused from 13. Some vessels have successfully gotten their poundage out of the area. The committee and advisors talking through this over the last few months are pretty much all on the same page that it makes the most sense to roll this over, to keep the access area program whole, to, you know, continue to have confidence in our area rotation scheme. And if you get a trip and it doesn't work out, there's this distributional issue going on where some people got it in the lottery and some people did not. So the interest from the industry is to make this whole system whole, that these should be honored and provided for. However, the thought is that if they roll over to closed area one in the future, that would have fewer impacts on other aspects of the fishery. There are alternatives in the document that look at rolling it over to open areas. And the preferred alternative from both the advisors and the committee is to not do that and instead to roll it over to closed area one. Now, closed area one is not in good shape now. We do not expect it to be part of the area rotation program for several years. So the preferred alternative selected is basically saying after the omnibus amendment is passed and if those boundaries around closed area one change based on that action, which it appears they may, since there's no, you know, habitat hotspots in and around closed area one so far, then there is a decent amount of scallop biomass just north of the current access area. So the thought with this preferred alternative is that in a future scallop action after all of those things occur with the omnibus amendment potentially and that area reopens, these unused trips could come out of that area. And there is sufficient biomass, we think, right now, based on the estimates in that northern part of closed area one that could support 1.5 million pounds, it seems. It was clarified at the committee level that everyone needs to understand this is not going to be some, you know, add-on to the ACL or to have future trickle-down impacts on the rest of this flow chart. How this will work is that in the year when that area is potentially available, these trips would need to be accounted for. So it will reduce the amount of future closed area one catch for the rest of the fishery, but it would be basically within that ACL that the limited access fishery would have. It would not be an add-on to that ACL. So the committee motion is there. There was one issue we were seeking clarity on related to this from the PDT. When we started looking at this by vessel, we found that there's a lot of vessels that really only have a couple hundred pounds, which is not a surprise. It's a possession limit. People do not want to exceed it. They're very careful to stay underneath their possession limit. So there's a table in the document on page 35 that shows you a breakdown of how many pounds people actually have left in different groups. And the thought was that if it's from 2012, you can see in the committee motions are pretty specific to it, that, again, came right from the advisors. If you have an unused trip from 2012, the agency's not going to simply say, okay, if you have 100 pounds left over, you get to use that again. You had to actively, from 2012, submit, it's called a broken trip adjustment sheet to actually qualify for those unused pounds. So we're assuming when this all shakes out that the people with very little poundage, you'll see that the majority of vessels have very little poundage left over, they most likely did not submit a broken trip adjustment sheet, so they would not be part of this group. For 2013, however, because the council's been talking about this for a year, the industry is pretty aware that we're considering some type of measure for those unused trips. And the agency recently sent an email to the entire fleet explaining that, look, you don't have to actively break your closed area one trip this year because 2013 is getting toward the end. So instead, you're not required to break it, and they basically sent that out. So that's why there's a difference in the motions for the two different years. 2013, if you read the motion, it's clarifying that vessels would not have to submit a broken trip adjustment sheet for those 2013 trips, and those would just automatically roll over and be available for whatever the council decides to do with those trips.
Any questions before? Go ahead, Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Deirdre. I will be making a motion on behalf of the committee. The scallop committee recommends AP motion number 5 and number 6 relative to use of unused 2012 and 2013 closed area 1 trips be preferred for framework 25. And I'm not going to read both of the AP motions. I think Deirdre covered it pretty well.
She sure did. Committee motion doesn't need a second. Is there any discussion from the council? Is there any discussion from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 15-0-0, one recusal. Why don't we do one more, Mary Beth, and take a break?
Okay, so we're at decision number 5, allocation of fleet-wide access area trips, allocations for the limited access general category fishery. And, again, I'll let Deirdre provide a little background here.
Yep, this was a pretty brief discussion at both levels since it's the preferred recommendation is basically to do what we've been doing in the last few years. As I mentioned this morning, the general category IFQ overall allocation is the same under any of the specification alternatives considered. What potentially could be different is that we do provide the general category fishery a fleet-wide number of access area trips available to them. It's not an individual allocation. It's a fleet-wide number of trips equivalent to 5.5%, so the same basically overall allocation that they have. They are provided a fleet-wide number of trips that the fleet can take if they choose to. Those trips count against their individual IFQs, but the agency does track them during the year, and a certain access area would close when that fleet-wide TAC is expected to be reached. The issue comes up with closed area 2. It's very far from shore. No general category fishing occurs out there. So basically the options in the document are, okay, we provide 5.5% of all areas open across the board, including closed area 2, or as we've done in years past, we take the closed area 2 trips, that same 5.5%, and we prorate those into areas that are closer to shore that the general category fleet would be more apt to take. So their percentages for Nantucket Lightship, for example, and Delmarva would be slightly higher overall for that area, but it would be zero for closed area 2. So the added percentage remains the same in terms of 5.5% of all areas combined. There is a table in the document, table 13 on page 39, that basically shows you what happens and the difference between these two options. There's not a lot of access out in closed area 2 this year. We're talking about 200 or so trips that would be available to the general category fishery. And when you take those two trips and prorate them between the two areas, it's not a substantial increase or anything that we would be concerned about in terms of impacts on the resource. Arguably, if all the trips are taken, you might get a little more activity from general category trips. But in general, because it's voluntary, you're only really going to see general category vessels in there if the catch rates are better than in the open areas closer to shore. So, you know, it's hard to say. With Delmarva, it may be attractive to the vessels from the south if the catch rates are, in fact, better in there than the open areas, and similar with Nantucket Lightship. But overall, the projected catch rates for all of those areas are kind of within the ballpark, so it's, you know, we're not really expecting a huge rush, if you will, into any of these areas because the projected catch rates are pretty similar. We are hearing from the general category fishery in some nearshore areas they are more fished down, so you might actually see more access area activity from the general category fishery. This year in particular, 2013, we did not get near the limits that have been set for these different areas because catches were sufficient in the open areas. The preferred recommendation is option 2.
Any questions? Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of the committee, the Scallop Committee recommends option 2 in section 2.1.4.3 related to allocation of fleet-wide access area trip allocations for the limited access general category fishery as preferred.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second. Are there any comments from the council? Are there any comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Okay. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 15-0-0 with one recusal, and we are going to take a 10-minute break. KD, whenever you're ready. Whenever you're ready. Mary Beth.
So we're on decision number 6 in Deidre's presentation, and she will provide us with some background on this item.
So another thing that needs to be set in a specification package is the Northern Gulf of Maine hard tack. And the same alternatives are in this document that have been in the last two specification packages, basically no action, which is 70,000 pounds. And this is the original tack that we set for this area right when Amendment 11 first established this fishery. And it was based on basically an average of historical catches at that time. Alternative 2 is another option, which has been developed based on updated surveys of the area. Northern Gulf of Maine, the federal waters, as you know, basically stretch from about halfway through Massachusetts and all the way to the Canadian border. There have been two resource surveys of this region funded through RSA projects. The last one was done in 2012, and through the PDT, we basically took the results from that survey and estimated the biomass within the federal portion of the Northern Gulf of Maine. And based on some decisions about precaution to use, because it is, even though it was a dedicated survey, it's a very large area. It was not a huge number of stations. They did run into some issues, and they did find, you know, pockets of some scallops here and there. A lot of the meats, when they went back, it's been 2 years that they've done this survey, did not really get to that growth potential. I think a lot of people were hoping that it would. So long story short, the recommendation from the PDT is that based on these survey results, 58,000-pound hardtack would be another option to consider as a more resource survey-based alternative. When this has been brought to the council in the past, you have decided to stick with no action. The catch has been very low from the Northern Gulf of Maine for the first few years that the program was in place. The risks of exceeding or even reaching this tax seemed very low. This particular fishing year, 2013, we have seen an increase in catch by this permit type. The Northern Gulf of Maine hard tack is right now around 30,000 pounds, I believe. The last that I checked, which is a lot higher than it had been in years before, it was, you know, 10,000 pounds, 15,000 pounds. So there's definitely an increase in catch that's going on with this permit type. The advisors and committee, as well as some correspondence that you've received that are included in your package, have endorsed the no-action alternative, the 70,000 pounds. As the preferred recommendation. That's probably about all I would say about the Northern Gulf of Maine hard tack.
Are there any questions for Dee? David?
Yeah, Deidre, from that slide, we see 58,000 or so pounds, and it corresponds to a dredge efficiency of 0.50. So my question is, as part of this updated information, this 2012 survey of the area, was there some specific decision about the dredge efficiency? Because you have 0.40 in the table as well, which would have the TAC go up to around 73,000 pounds, which is close to 70,000. So how important is this? How what were we using for a dredge efficiency? And have we concluded that it must be 0.50?
That is the current PDT recommendation. We considered a range there, as you can see, and to be clear, a lot of this more focused discussion the PDT had a year ago when the survey was just done for last year's specification package. We didn't have any new information this year, so the PDT did not have a lot of discussions about the Northern Gulf of Maine this year. We just basically took everything from last year and applied it again. We did talk about the dredge efficiency. The reason, you know, we looked at a few of them to kind of see what that difference could be. 0.5 is similar to what we use in the regular assessment of the fishery. So that was basically the PDT's best suggestion for that value.
Other comments? Any comments from the audience? Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Hatch, advisor for Maine. I've tried to get something started with this Northern Gulf of Maine to get some traction. I'm seeing a little bit of fishery come back. Biggest thing that I'm seeing is a lot of our fishery is still in these closed areas, mostly Jeffries and Fippenies. So I guess my point would be is that the 70,000 pounds, I think, will be a good figure to stick at so that we can build our fishery, especially being a small community fishery with the state of the groundfish fishery and I don't know what the herring fishery will be this summer. I think that we don't really see a chance making the 70,000 pounds, but it would be nice to think that the fishery rebounded to that point. Going over that point, well, that's something that we'd have to look into. But I will be seeking traction to get some more surveys in these closed areas so we can better justify where we're headed in the northern Gulf of Maine. Thank you.
You have a question for Gary Terry?
So I was under the understanding that most of that fishery is around Newledge, Gary. I didn't know anything about Fifanese and Jeffries. Are they even allowed in there at this point, or are you trying to get them in there at this point?
Well, no. And traditionally, those were the two major fishing areas that we have. And I think you'll find that that's why Newledge is coming to life, because there's a pretty good biomass in both places, especially on that east side of Jeffries. We need to do the surveys. We need to get this stuff, you know, logged in as, you know, what's going on. And the biggest thing for me at this point, considering, you know, the hardships that we've been through for the last 10, 15 years in the Gulf of Maine, is to prevent what happened back when we had our meat count and everybody came out and loaded up in the channel and come to the Gulf of Maine and devastated us to mix them in to make the meat count. And, I hope we can move past that.
Are there any other comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so.
I don't think I've made the motion.
Oh, you haven't made the motion?
No.
Damn. I've just made it for you, Mary Beth.
That was really quick. So I will make the motion on behalf of the committee. The Scallop Committee recommends no action for Section 2.1.5 for the hard tack for the Northern Gulf of Maine. 70,000 pounds is preferred.
I think you all know how difficult it is for me not to be able to comment on this. Are there any comments on the motion on the board? David.
Well, this is a bit of a difficult one because it seems the plan development team is indicating it should be 58,000. Updated survey results indicate it should be 58,000. So I don't understand the basis for the 70,000. New surveys, PDT recommendation. Sure, it's a higher number, and it will benefit the smaller fishermen, small-scale fishermen. I mean, that case has been made already, and we have, as a council, consistently gone with the 70,000. But I don't think we've ever confronted this sort of additional information that influences our decisions, or at least should. So I find it hard to support the motion in light of what's in the framework relative to updated Northern Gulf of Maine hard TAC alternative, 58,000 pounds, which seems to be the way we should go, unless I've missed some of the logic here that hasn't yet been provided.
Mary Beth?
Well, I will speak to that, and then obviously if Dieter thinks of anything additional, I'd ask her to speak to it as well. But certainly at the AP and the committee, we did have those discussions about the survey in particular, and as Dieter pointed out, the area is quite large, and the survey coverage for the area is more concentrated. There were a lot of issues with the survey, primarily, the ability to do many stations, lobster gear, and things for that nature. And those were really the primary, concerns, is that we need to have more surveys, more area covered in the area, and that overall the landings still remain well below the number. But Dieter, do you want to add anything to that?
I don't think so, except I would just clarify for David that the PDT did bring the same exact information to the council last year. This is not the first time that we've presented these results and suggesting a different tack. The tacks are obviously close. It's not a huge difference between them, so it's not anything maybe to lose a lot of sleep over. One is arguably more survey-based than the other. My recollection from last year when you were faced with the same question was the risk and the fishery level was so low that there really was essentially no chance that we were going to get to 58 or 70. This year, you may take a little more pause and that it does seem as an uptick, but as Gary mentioned, you know, will 30,000 become 50,000? Who knows? I don't think we even expected it to be over 30,000 this year. So I think the rationale kind of last year was there wasn't a huge push to reduce it, and hey, if we don't need to keep reducing, we keep reducing and reducing, let's just leave one alone, would probably capture the discussion you had about it last year.
Vincent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to support the motion on the board, and the reason I'm going to support the motion on the board is I'm going to look at figure 22 on page 78 of the discussion document. And you look at the five-area survey, and there's not a lot of color, and there's a lot of white. So this area really hasn't been surveyed very well, and you're only looking at about, what, 12,000 pounds difference in the tack. I don't think it's too risky for us to approve that higher tack right now, especially with the amount of area that hasn't been surveyed in this northern Gulf of Maine skull thing there. You just look at it, it's just a handful of spots around the three-mile mark. The areas around Cape Ann were surveyed probably the most extensively, but there's a huge component of bottom offshore that hasn't even been touched. So for that reason, I'm going to support the motion on the board. Thank you.
Terry?
Yeah, for the same reasons, I'm going to support the motion. You know, I think it's a fairly localized fishery in the northern Gulf of Maine. We get pulses of scallops that can come through and around New Ledge and Pippinese and Jeffries, and there are a bunch of the boats that are doing it are part-time scallopers and displaced groundfish boats, so it's a little mitigation for them. So I agree that we should go on with the 70,000 pounds.
Anybody else on the council wish to comment? Anybody in the audience? Back to the council. Okay, this time. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 15-0-0 with one recusal. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One major section of the document remains, and the PDD did a tremendous amount of work on this. It is AMs for window pane, and so I will turn it over to Deirdre, and she'll walk us through all of the different alternatives.
Thank you. Yes, this one may not go as quickly as some of the previous ones, not really because there isn't general consensus about the preferred recommendation, but instead because this was kind of finalized more toward the end of the process, and the full council has not seen a lot of the information that the committee and advisors have been digesting more recently. So I will walk you through a few background slides about the general methods that have been used and what the final alternatives actually are, since you haven't seen them yet. Decision 7 is the windowpane AMs. As we mentioned, there is a sub-ACL for the Southern New England Mid-Atlantic windowpane stock. It's 183 metric tons for at least the next year or so. And as you saw from the projections, this fishery is not, you know, doesn't seem to be bumping up against that, or the risk doesn't seem to be very high that these would be triggered in the near future anyway, since the projections are really quite lower than the ACL. But we did develop a pretty wide range of alternatives. There is an alternative 2, to have a seasonal closure, similar to what we have for yellowtail, but it's a little different in nature in terms of how it would work, but it is a seasonal closure. Alternative 3 is a seasonal gear-restricted area. So instead of a closure, vessels would be required to comply with a gear that is found to reduce windowpane catch. And finally, a proactive, different than the previous two, would be reactive AMs that would only be triggered or imposed on the fishery if a certain if AMs were triggered. Different than that, alternative 4 is proactive, and basically is if adopted as soon as Framework 25 is implemented, this would be a requirement proactively to help the fleet reduce bycatch up front. There is, related to this topic, we did need to finalize these areas, as has been mentioned, and there is some clarity about some language of how the AMs would actually work and when they would be effective. So there is some text that the committee handled by consensus. again, similar to what you did this morning with the specifications, kind of read through that and make sure you're comfortable with it, and then we can update the document to reflect those suggestions. So, as Mary Beth Tooley mentioned, the PDT has spent a significant amount of time on this topic. We kind of came onto it right after the heels with Yellowtail. As you know, the Scala PDT also worked on Yellowtail AMs for several years. We have a very complex system in place for Yellowtail AMs. For better or worse, we have different AMs for different fleets of the fishery with different seasons. And I think the PDT took a lot of that information, and we tried to kind of learn from that experience. And we went with a slightly different approach this time. Using a lot of the similar information, we basically developed a model that would try to model the spatial and temporal variations in window pane and scallop catch rates. So we used as much observer data as we could to model those different D to K ratios. And this time we did it on a 10-minute square basis, whereas before we were doing 3-minute statistical areas. We tried to refine the areas down to 10-minute squares, which we were able to do this time compared to previous actions. On top of that, we looked at VMS data to then try to get a sense of how to expand that to the full fishery. And we took, again, as much VMS data for the fishery as we could, separated out by permit type and gear type, to get a sense of, to basically expand that observer coverage and then also get a sense of what the fleet may or may not do following a closure. And we went through this process, which is very, which is outlined in document number 3. It's a pretty thick attachment. We will attach something like this to the final framework, which explains all of the methods and the different data that we used and the different, you know, iterative steps that went on, hopefully as a method to potentially, you know, do this kind of thing. But ultimately, in a nutshell, kind of on one slide, what the model did for us is it identified the 10-minute squares with the highest D to K ratios, and then if those, in fact, were closed, what where vessels would go in neighboring cells and what that new window pane catch would be. So at the end of the day, we could determine an estimate of window pane reductions as well as the percent of scallop effort displaced by these different alternatives. I'll quickly show you a few of the things that we used to help us do this, and it was a lot of back and forth. A lot of members on the PDT worked on this and even beyond the PDT at the Science Center to kind of work on this process back and forth. The slide you see, the figure you see on the left is basically an output from this model. And what it's showing you kind of in a cool to warm scale is the different 10-minute squares, and I realize it's hard to see, but all of this is also in document 3. It helped us hone in on the areas with the highest bycatch rates first. And so these series of cells, when you add them up over the course of a year, month 1 would be the lower left. Those would be the cells for January, February, March, and so on. All of those cells combined would give you, based on this model result, a 30% reduction in window pane overall. So if you closed all of those cells together and that effort moved somewhere else, you would get a 30% reduction in window pane. Now, when we look at this output, it seems, well, it's not very useful. This is not very practical. We cannot implement this changing every single month in all of these tiny little areas. So this is where we began the back and forth with the PDT in terms of how can we turn this into an actual spatial area. We used VMS data, as I mentioned, on the right-hand side. This is basically taking all of the VMS pings for the entire scallop fishery and summarizing them by 10-minute square, and the ones that are lighter in color basically are more fishing occurring in those 10-minute squares. So we did our best to kind of use that to avoid those areas with the higher concentrations of effort and kind of using it together with the two window pane, with the more window pane coastal areas, which mostly show up south of Long Island and then all along the coast down through New Jersey. The other important element of information we used is the season. So this chart on the top is showing you basically, again, observer data, all observer data that's available by month, and depth. Depth does seem to be an important element for window pane, and the bycatch rates do seem to vary by depth over the course of the year. And again, a model was developed to basically estimate using the observer data available and then projecting out the rest of the year what the different modeled D2K rates would be by depth and month. And from this, you can see that really the months of August, September, October, this is when you see the higher bycatch rates. And then in the shallow depths, 20 fathoms, which is not a very heavily fished depth for scallops, but it is, you know, fished at some level, in the winter you do see that increase in bycatch rates. Finally, of course, we looked at catch rates by month, and there's a lot more information than quickly what I'm showing in these slides, but we looked at VTR data by month, and the Mid-Atlantic is the one that's been highlighted here on the screen with the circles. The Mid-Atlantic in this table is describing all of the statistical areas that overlap with the Southern New England Mid-Atlantic windowpane stock. So this is basically showing you a percentage in terms of scallop catch for each fishery, limited access on the left, general category on the right, for a series of years combined, when they typically are catching the majority of their Mid-Atlantic catch. So we sort of use these things and massage them back and forth to come up with final boundaries. Now, originally, these boundaries were even more irregular than what you see. They had angles to them, and we showed them to the enforcement agency within National Marine Fisheries Service. Again, we worked back and forth with their input to try to make them as regular as we could, enforceable as possible, and what you end up with is a series of three polygons. The one on the top is what we call Area 1, and this is the final alternative for Alternative 2 as what was presented to the committee and included in the document. Alternative 2 is the blue, navy blue area to the far north, and basically the different triggers are if the scallop fishery, if AMs are triggered and the overage is more than zero but less than five, those series of 10-minute squares would close to all vessels fishing for scallops between August and November. And similarly, the next closure would be the orange one off of New Jersey, the one the farthest south. Again, these areas are large. They are mostly inshore of the concentrations of scallop fishing effort and where the biomass is, but they are large in order to get some of these reductions. You know, if we have closures that are too small, then you won't get any windowpane reduction from them. So what we found, we were a bit surprised that some of these polygons ended up having to be quite large to kind of encompass when we were trying to constrain the different seasons and to stay away from those highly concentrated effort VMS areas. They ended up being pretty large. And when they go to the coast, just for your purposes, the scallop resource really isn't that near shore anyway. But the windowpane do seem to go pretty shallow. Anyway, I digress. The second area is off of New Jersey. That one would be implemented if the overage is more than between 5% and 10%. So you would have both closures in that scenario. Finally, if the overage is over 10%, all three of those polygons would be implemented. If you'll notice, the seasons are different. Again, we're trying to identify the seasons with the highest windowpane bycatch, as well as balancing that with seasons when the fishery is not at its height. So it is, again, complicated and intricate. It at least is the same for all fisheries, which is a little different than yellowtail. The current situation we have is slightly different for each fishery. Important to note that the access areas are not impacted by AMs in this alternative, so there would be no seasonal closure at all within any of the Mid-Atlantic access areas that are shown in light green on the board. So this is the final alternative that's in the framework. It's what's been analyzed. When we finally have these boundaries, we're able to then feed that back into that same model and basically come up with an estimate of if you close, for example, these different 10-minute squares for the different prescribed seasons and you moved that effort that would have occurred there somewhere in its neighboring, you know, its neighborhood, and then, again, calculated the new windowpane catch, you can, at the end of the day, get a sense of what your associated windowpane reductions may be, as well as the percent of effort you would be displacing by these various polygons. So it's a lot of numbers on the screen. I realize that in a nutshell, they kind of are related to those different overage triggers. So the first polygon, just to walk through, is about a mean reduction of 5% in terms of the window pane estimates that you would get from closing that area for that those series of months. Excuse me. And then the effort displacement is broken out by fishery further over to the right. So the limited access fishery does not fish as near shore as the general category fishery in general. So you'll see that those percentages are lower for that first polygon. And then as you move down, you can see the associated increases in window pane catch as well as increases in effort displacement. And as you get to that larger one toward the bottom, you'll see your window pane reductions are well over 20%, kind of in the 27 ballpark. But you are displacing, you know, between 7 and 8% for both fisheries when you have all three of the areas combined. So that's the area closure alternative. Moving to alternative three, excuse me, this one we have shown the full council already. This one was developed earlier in the process in terms of the gear modification itself. So you have seen a lot of this information already. Essentially what it is it's a two-element dredge modification that would be required as an AM if you wanted to fish during whatever the area or season would ultimately be. There's two elements. It's a maximum number of rows in the rings of the apron of the dredge, which is the orange part at the bottom. Do I just point the middle here? Up the bottom, this is the top side of the dredge. So as the dredge is fishing, this is the part that's on the top moving through the water column. The apron of the dredge is the series of rows of rings that are at the club stick, the back of the dredge, and that are connected to the twine top. So right now, there's a regulation that vessels must have a minimum of 7 of these rows of rings. So this dredge requirement would actually reduce that down to 5, at least 5. Sorry, at most 5. So it essentially is increasing the size of the twine top, hopefully improving escapement of fish. The other part of this dredge configuration is a hanging ratio. Right now, most of the vessels in the scallop fishery fish with a 2 meshes in the twine top to each dredge ring, or even 3 meshes per ring, and even 4, and so on. So this would reduce that hanging ratio down to 1.5 meshes per ring. So it basically alternates 2 meshes, 1 mesh, 2 mesh, 1 mesh. So it is, again, in an effort to improve escapement of fish and opening up the twine top more. So those two elements together are what are included in the seasonal gear restriction AM. What the committee and advisors needed to do more recently was define the area that this would be an AM for, as well as the season. So that's what we spent a lot of time on last week. Just to summarize this gear research, again, I've showed you this already, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. And in that document 3, there's a lot of information about the window pane and this associated gear. I believe it's section 3. There's a lot of pages that show you, primarily from a recent RSA project, there were about 300 tows that have been compared between the control dredge as well as this experimental dredge that we were just discussing with those two gear elements, and all kinds of details about the difference in window pane catches, yellowtail catches, and so forth are all laid out in that report. At the end of the day, basically what the results suggest is that in terms of catch weights, the experimental dredge catches 45% less window pane than the control dredge, and it is a statistically significant difference. Just for your information, in terms of yellowtail, again, very impressive reductions in the ballpark of 40% reduction for yellowtail. Now, in terms of scallops, it's a little bit of a different story. As you increase that twine top and reduce the number of rows of rings at the end, you do reduce scallop catch. And, of course, this is something that the industry would be concerned about. So it's been developed for several years, and little tweaks have been made to the dredge to ultimately get at what the results are suggesting, that you do get a difference in numbers of scallops with this experimental dredge. It's less than 10% difference, and the analysis suggests that it is not significant. So when you look at the figure on the top right, for example, This is a modeled estimate of the difference by length frequencies. This is the size of scallops on the bottom. In terms of the numbers of scallops caught in the control dredge is in green, and the experimental dredge is in red. So you see across the entire spectrum of all different size scallops, the experimental dredge does catch fewer in numbers than the control dredge. But you'll see the difference between them is larger for smaller scallops, which for the most part, the industry doesn't want smaller scallops anyway, right? You know, the more that pass through, all the better. The discard mortality is lower for them. They stay on the bottom instead of being brought up and brought back down. So that would be positive in terms of overall impacts for the scallop resource. It does, though, catch fewer of the larger scallops, too, but you'll see that difference is not as great, especially when they're much larger. They're basically the same. So in a nutshell, it is catching fewer, but will those trade-offs be somewhat balanced with the fact that a lot of smaller scallops will suffer a lower discard mortality, which could be beneficial? So that's basically a summary of the GEER research. In terms of the area, this is where we had a lot of discussion. Sorry, this is a busy slide. Of what makes the most sense. Originally, we looked at using the same exact areas that I just described, those three different polygons for this GEER reduction. But then the thought also was, well, if that ends up being very complicated and vessels will have to declare in a certain area, or maybe this is just too much, we may get more window pane savings by just taking a line that's in the ocean already and requiring it everywhere. And so that's what the ultimate alternative is. Alternative 3 would basically say if AMs are triggered, the 71 West line is this one here in purple. This is the line where a vessel is required to use during a certain season the turtle excluder dredge, the turtle deflector dredge, in all waters in the mid-Atlantic during the turtle season. So this line does exist in the ocean already. It basically includes all of the southern New England windowpane stock area anyway. You do miss some of it off of Martha's Vineyard and over toward Nantucket Lightship. But for the most part, this boundary does encompass almost all of the windowpane stock area. So the ultimate AM that's in front of you is basically saying if it's triggered, again, we would have this if it's between over zero, but less than 20% is what the committee motion is, then vessels would be required to use this modified dredge for the month of February. So all fishing in this entire area for the month of February would need to use this excluder dredge. If the overage is over 20% is what the motion reads, it would be the months of March and February combined. So what the PDT did to provide information about a GEER modification is different than an area closure. Before, I was explaining that our model would take the area and then move the scallop effort somewhere else and then estimate how much the difference in window pane and effort impacted would be. In this case, it's a little different in that we take a certain season, we take a month, and instead of having the vessels need to move, we assume the same amount of effort will occur and the same monthly trends will be observed by month, but the vessels would have to switch their GEER. So we just more simply, if you will, take that same effort but apply a 45% reduction on the expected window pane catch. So we're not assuming that effort's moving or shifting or anything like that, which it might actually do in reality to avoid the AMs, but these numbers are just basically assuming the same effort patterns, but you get 45% less window pane catch because of the GEER modification. So you can see that it varies by year in terms of this potential reduction, and this is driven by where the fishery was fishing in those particular years and how much they fished in that month compared to a different month. And so if you really look at these over time, they do vary by year, but the mean is what's provided at the end, and that's what the committee kind of used in their discussions last week. So you'll see the month of February has a mean of 6.7%, and the months of February and March together is a little over 14%. Your next question may be, well, that's not the same as 20% is what the triggers are. And the committee did have a bit of a discussion about that and felt that as an AM, these were informative. February and March not February really, but March is a big fishing month. It's when the fishery opens. You can see that from some of these values. It's definitely a driver of why you get a lot of windowpane savings by concentrating on March. And the thought was for this first step, these would be the months that they would look at. But you could arguably look at any of these months separately because the way the analysis is before you, you can see the potential savings by month for all of them, not just the alternative that the committee's submitting. So, finally, the committee's recommendation is on this slide, motion 9. You can see from all of their discussions, they basically finalized these alternatives for the document. They are recommending alternative 3 as preferred. They've clarified where the area should be and what the season should be and those different triggers. And they also are adopting or suggesting the council adopt alternative 4, which is the proactive one, which, again, they're suggesting the same boundary, the 71 West. And if I didn't clear it up before, alternative 4, the proactive one, is not the same as this AM gear modification, but right now vessels are required to have at least 7 rows, I was mentioning, in that apron of the dredge. This proactive measure would instead flip that to be a maximum of 7. So they would only be allowed to fish up to 7. So if a vessel wanted to, they could fish 7, or if this is adopted, they could fish 6, or even 5, which is the AM alternative, would be down to 5. Again, in general, the shorter your apron is, the more potential loss there is for scallops, but more flatfish escapement is the assumption there. So it's both of these alternatives for recommendation for preferred. I think I'll stop there.
Need a glass of water. Questions? Mike?
It's actually a comment, not a question. If you want to...
Yeah, let's do questions first. PK?
Yeah, thanks, Dee. I can't remember. How did we treat any scallops that were caught by net?
Thanks.
I know it was minimal, but...
Yes, thanks for asking that question. So there is an alternative in the document that has an option of, are you going to prohibit trawl gear, or are you going to exempt it from this AM? And the committee decided that the way it was worded in terms of alternative 3 states that all scallop vessels would be impacted by this AM, which de facto, basically, that they would not be exempt. They would have to go by this as well. So the trawl fleet, in reality, unless they wanted to switch their trawl vessels over to dredge and comply with this, unless they want to do that, this would essentially become a closure for them for the months of March and April, unless they want to, you know, rig over to that. In terms of their catch of windowpane, it is in that same document 3. There's a section in there that summarizes the catch of windowpane in the last few years by type, and I believe the trawl fishery was about 5% of the total. The Gen Cat trawl fishery is catching about 5% of the total this year.
PK.
Do we know how many boats that equated to? How many trawl vessels that was?
Yes, we do. In Document 8, I should have pointed this out earlier, Document 8 is kind of a quick, after the committee meeting last week and your alternatives were final, we put together basically the potential impacts of those. And within there, there's a table 6. Table 6 on page 13 in Document 8 shows you the number of active general category vessels by gear type. And for the last 3 years, you can get a sense. So you would want to combine otter trawl scallop and otter trawl fish, because some people declare either way. But roughly, it's 30 to 40 vessels. And you'll see the number of active vessels does go down between 2009, 10, and 11. But just looking at 11, you're right at about 40 vessels active trawl fishing.
Tom.
Thanks, and I was going to highlight the same issue. So of those 40 vessels, they're responsible for 5% of the window pane catch overall. Do you know their scallop catch proportional or their percentage?
So the scallop catch is, dictated by their IFQ, and I believe it's under 1%. And then just to travel through the rest, the GenCat dredge fishery is estimated to catch about 15% of the total window pane catch, and their scallop allocation is like 4%. A lot of that is in, again, document 3, section 5.
So was there a discussion about separate AMs, given the sort of inshore nature of these areas? Was there a discussion for a proactive AM for the GenCat specifically, which would involve, dredge-only fishing and or, either a proactive or reactive AM that would involve a temporary transition to dredge fishing in that area?
If I understand your question, we didn't discuss separating out the sub-ACL. We kind of saw that as a dead end from our discussions related to Yellowtail, that it was not feasible to divide the sub-ACL even further. In terms of the proactive AM, that's the preferred alternative, that would impact anyone with a dredge. Well, it would impact everyone, so it would be a GenCat dredge and limited access dredge. There is not in the document a proactive trawl gear requirement because we do not really have what we would need in terms of results of a gear modification for the trawl fleet. But as Motion 10 reads, it would impact all GenCat dredge and limited access dredge fishing west of 71.
You all set, Tom? John?
Thanks. It's a lot of information to absorb, and I'm not sure I've got it right. So my question is, the preferred alternative is the gear modification, and it seems to me that what the preferred alternative is saying is if the scallop fishery is estimated to go over between 0% and 20%, then the gear would be in place for 1 month, and that's projected to reduce window pane by 6.7% when the estimated overage is between 0 and 20. And if it's estimated to go over by more than 20%, then the gear would be in place for 2 months, and that would be in place, that would result in about 14% when the overage is more than 20%. Have I got that right? About?
Yes, you do. And it did remind me the Groundfish PDT has commented about the window pane AMs in general, and it's included in their memo that you have in your documents, number 4, I think. They too noticed, not particularly that point because this final alternative was only developed last week, but in general, their comments, they also noticed that if you look at by year, that percentage varies by year in terms of what that possible reduction could be. And their general comment, the Groundfish PDT, was particularly when there's a high variance, you may not actually get those reductions that, you're hoping for. Because it does vary by year to year, and it would depend on the fishery. But your direct question, the answer is yes, you have the percentages correct. Comments have been made and suggestions have been kind of aired that, these reductions may not totally pan out unless the fishery operates exactly as these historical years that were used to come up with the reduction values.
So if we put in place the preferred alternative, we're likely not to get reductions that account for the overages. That's what it looks like. I mean, we know up front that we're going to get reductions that aren't aren't, especially in the case of over 20%, that aren't even close to what the overages are. And that seems to be what we're setting ourselves up for.
Other questions for Dee? Are there any questions from the audience? Ron?
So, Ron Smallwoods Fishery Survival Fund. So if, in fact, an AM is triggered and the and it's, let's say it's over 20, so there's a February and March closure, did you analyze that some people might decide, instead of taking the possible 10% loss in scallops, they'd shift their fishing to March or April, let's say April and May? You had mentioned that you did not analyze that, but that is a significant possibility that would reduce the window pane catch even further.
So it's complicated, and Document 8 tries to get at it qualitatively. You're correct. The table in the document with all the numbers does not include any assumptions about people not fishing. We assume the same patterns and apply that 45%. Qualitatively, in Document 8, we do try to expand on that and explain that if people fish outside of those months, that, you know, that might help. But to be honest, there's several months when window pane bycatch rates generally are higher, so it's more complicated that, yes, it might help if they don't fish in March and in February and March, but that effort could go in a month with higher bycatch rates or it could go in a month with lower. So we kind of handled it qualitatively that it's a little uncertain if they decide not to fish then what the actual change on impact on window pane would be.
So it is hard to calculate, but conceivably, because these are open area days in the high window pane areas, that they would go fish on George's Bank open areas. So, in effect, the effort would completely switch out of the southern New England window pane area.
Or they could fish in a different season. You know, a boat from Virginia might not want to do that. Right. They might want to just fish outside the window.
So the fact is there's – it's not – again, like I said, numbers are an aid to reasoning, but they're not the whole story. There's a there's a more overriding thing from the industry standpoint, which is to start bringing in this this gear into the fishery, because the end result is this gear is going to greatly decrease all aspects of flatfish catch. So in a way, it's not a quid pro, you know, an AM isn't necessarily a punishment. It's not necessarily trying to make up for lost catch. But this is a step in our long-term plan, where to get the dredge to probably have about a 95% reduction in flatfish catch.
Any further questions from the audience? Peter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Peter Hughes, Atlantic Cape Fisheries, Cape May, New Jersey. I guess the only other thing that I'd bring back up is slide number 11 that shows the overall 2014 sub-ACL for window pane, southern New England. Window pane is 183 metric tons, and the projections for all of the alternatives are less than 50% of the projections. I understand that they're projections, but that's what the projections are telling us at this time. Thank you.
Back to the council. Tom.
I'm just curious, does this measure include any sort of reconsideration of the AMs if the overage exceeds 20%, something similar? There's a similar type measure for some of the groundfish AMs that NIMS insisted upon for window pane flounder and ocean pout?
It currently does not have any language like that. I would imagine without it, we would just fall on the what's in the Magnuson Act, that if there's an overage in more than 2 of 3 years, that, you know, the council should revisit it. But there's no specific language that says anything about, you know, doing it right away.
Any more questions? Mike.
Yes, thank you. Sort of a follow-up or related issue to the one Ron raised. Ron raised a point that
If the result of implementing the AMs is that vessels simply don't fish in the area during those months, then, in fact, the actual reduction in window pane catch could be greater than the PDT is calculated. I think that's correct in terms of what you said.
It is for some months, but some of that, you know, you're not sure when they would fish, but they could actually fish. There are other months that are high as well, such as August and September. If they shift that effort to then it could be a wash.
Okay. Another unaccounted for effect, I think it's unaccounted for, and this is what I need your confirmation on, that would go in the opposite way, is that in fact, if boats fished harder in order to catch the same amount of scallops with a gear that's slightly less efficient for scallops, then in fact the amount of window pane bycatch reduction that has been estimated would actually be an overestimate of the reduction, where that is they'd catch a little bit more window pane. Is that correct as well?
So that is not in these tables either, in terms of the fact that if this gear catches fewer scallops to get that same poundage, you may have to tow longer. It is still days at sea, which adds an element of control on that to more degree than if this was an access area.
Mm-hmm.
But because it is days at sea, and if vessels did need to fish longer, yes, the gear may be on the bottom longer, and that's not in these values. We did try to address that in the qualitative discussion in Document 8 as best we could. But because it is days at sea, it's better than if it was an access area.
I'm not particularly worried about it one way or the other. I was just trying to make the point that there are a lot of uncertainties here, and they can go in both directions. Thank you.
Mayor Beth.
Yeah, and just to add a little bit more about the conversation that was at the AP and the committee on this, and as Ron mentioned as well, is that some of this is, you know, a step approach in a direction, and we'll get to the proactive AM in the following motion. And I think, you know, a gear change is very significant for a fishery. So the proactive AM will take that first step at moving them in that direction all of the time. And so many people at the table at the AP, when they talked about this, felt that if someone's going to change their dredge, then they're likely to leave it on. And but convincing people wholesale right off the bat, I mean, it takes a little bit because clearly the research does show that you're going to catch fewer scallops. It does appear that the weight of those scallops will be better, and so I think when people go out and do it, hopefully that will be the incentive for them to just keep it on. So that's another uncertainty. So there are a number of things here that can impact the outcome, and as Dieter pointed out, I mean, if it doesn't pan out, then we'll have to do something different. But people thought this was a step in the right direction.
Okay, I'm seeing no other hands. So Mike?
I did want to make a broader comment rather than a question. Is that appropriate?
You might as well. Then we'll go right into a motion after that.
Well, either way, but okay. With the anticipation that the motion will be up shortly, I will support the motion. And I support it as a practical matter. We have to agree on something. There's been a huge amount of work done on this, and it seems like a reasonable way to deal with the AM issue with respect to window pane. Having said that, I want to make the general comment that, in fact, I'm pretty appalled by the amount of work that's been necessary to address what I consider to be a relatively minor issue or problem, and that I think we need to think about the system we've created here, a system that is stressed by people and resources that are being overutilized in every direction we turn, yet we've seen a tremendous amount of effort that's gone into creating an AM for a situation where the data we have seen projects that we're likely to only catch what's about half of what's available anyway. So that's frustrating to me in this resource-strained system. It actually leads me to a broader concern about AMs and how we're dealing with them. And somebody raised it in a comment, I think it was Ron. First, I think we need to get clear whether the AMs are about punishment or about compensating for some sort of accident that occurred that might jeopardize conservation. And those are two fundamentally different issues, and it strikes me that we're going through all this work to establish a mechanism for punishment If that's what it's for, that's a different discussion. I don't want to get into arguing about that one way or another. But if it's about conservation, I think we need to think about engineering the systems in a way that actually achieves the important outcomes we want in terms of conservation. And I'm afraid we're not doing that. In the particular case of scallops, we've got a situation where we have a very strong incentive to avoid window pane and yellowtail. We have an industry that's demonstrated its cooperativeness and its positive attitude about trying to achieve those objectives of avoiding incidental catch. We have technologies that are being demonstrated that are workable and being increasingly used. And so we also have to face that we're dealing with incidental catch of species that are, in fact, based on limits that are set on quite uncertain assessments. We have wide agreement that the yellowtail assessment has a number of issues and uncertainties, and I'm not criticizing anybody, but it's widely understood. It's an uncertain assessment. Window pane, being a minor stock, you would expect also to be a relatively uncertain assessment compared to others. That's just the nature of assessing minor stocks. So we've got this system that's built on strong incentives to avoid the incidental catch of these species, technology available to avoid them, uncertain assessments. And so what's a logical reason that you might end up with, say, catching twice as much window pane as we anticipate? It might be that there are a lot more window pane than the assessment shows. And again, that's not a criticism. That's just a reality of an outcome that could occur. So what's our reaction going to be if there are a lot more window pane than we expected? Reduce the fishing mortality. What if there are a lot less window pane and we catch even less than we anticipated? We do nothing to reduce fishing mortality when there are less. So we've designed a system that builds in a bunch of responses that essentially say, if stocks are better than we thought, let's reduce the fishery. If they're worse than we thought, we do nothing. That, to me, is not an accountability measure that, in a systems engineering way, does the right thing for conservation. Now, having said all that, again, I said I'll vote for this because practically we have to do something. But I did want to comment on a couple of aspects that, for the future, we might think about. One of them is, do we actually have to have these sort of accountability measures that have generated this amount of work for our staff, and both in the center and in the council staff, and just other scientists who have participated? Or is there another alternative? And one of them that we ought to consider further is, in fact, establishing ACTs for these stocks within the groundfish plan, which could serve as an accountability measure. Now, I've raised that before, and I've got some various people that say, no, an ACT is not an accountability measure. Actually, I don't know what the various views are on that or where they come from, but I can tell you in the training that Ellen and I and Jeff Kalin in the audience were all forced to go to, we had a fairly strong lecture about accountability measures, including very explicit statements that ACTs can serve as accountability measures. So I throw that out on the table. In fact, I actually just looked up dug out a memo or an email from Galen Trumbly, who, when I inquired to make sure I got it right, basically says, yeah, the national standard guidelines say they can be an accountability measure. So I think we may consider that more in the future. The other aspect of this that I wanted to raise generically is that, again, with scallops and a number of other fisheries, we have very complex systems with lots of feedbacks in them and lots of uncertainties. And we think we're doing the right thing, and I think as best we can, I think we are doing the right thing. But I don't think we actually understand how these systems perform in a complete sense, given all these dynamics and interactions and uncertainties. As I described, the sort of counterintuitive outcomes you can get with AMs. And one of the things that the agency itself and is also advocated within that National Research Council report that was mentioned yesterday is more application of what's called management strategy evaluation, which within the science community is widely accepted as an important tool. It can't be applied to every fishery because it's too requires too many resources. But if there was a candidate fishery in this region to apply it to, both because of its complexity and its value, it's scallops. And so I would also encourage that the PDT have discussions about to what degree that can be developed. There is expertise in the region that's fully capable of pursuing it, although it is a resource-intensive activity. Thank you for your patience.
Hard act to follow there, Mary Beth.
Yes, it certainly is. But it gives us a lot of food for thought, and I hope that people will think about all that Mike had to say. So on behalf of the committee, motion number 9, alternative 2.2.3 is a reactive seasonal gear restricted area AM. The AM area shall be all waters west of 71 West, not including scallop access areas. If AMs are triggered and the overage by the scallop fishery is estimated to be greater than 1% and less than 20%, the AM would be in place for the month of February. If the overage is over 20%, the AM season would be for the months of February and March.
Committee motion, which doesn't need a second. Are there any comments from the council? Tom.
Yeah, I won't be long, but I think both John and Mike highlight some of the downfalls or predictable negative outcomes of an ad hoc accountability measure approach that's area-based, that's large, unpredictable in its impacts, and likely not to be adequate in any sort of conservation goal of an AM in terms of paying things back. I think it reinforces the need to take a holistic approach as we tried to prioritize this year in the groundfish fishery to look at all our sub-ACLs and our AMs and try to work this out. As a temporary Band-Aid, I guess we have to bite this bullet and do it, but I really don't think that overlapping area closures, predominantly inshore, are going to work out, particularly for the smaller boat inshore fleet. I think Mike's points were well made in terms of the difficulty of making projections and how we should look at catch utilization as an index of where we're setting our quotas. And I think we heard this morning that, we're not catching a lot of yellowtail. And at times that's used as a reason why, we can justify some of our harvest strategies. And at times it's used in exactly the opposite way. So as a temporary Band-Aid, this is fine. But I think we need to get away from area-based AMs that are just going to end up drawing concentric lines in the ocean that predominantly impact the inshore fleet. I don't think it's sustainable. I don't think it's getting the job done.
Are there comments from the council? Are there any comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Are there any final comments? Okay. Those support the motion on the board, please indicate so. 15. Motion carries 15-001. Mary Beth.
So final motion on this section, motion number 10, also adopt alternative 4 as preferred, a proactive windowpane AM that would prohibit a scallop dredge vessel from having more than 7 rows of rings in the apron of a scallop dredge in all waters west of 70. All waters west of 71 West, excluding mid-Atlantic access areas.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second. Are there any comments from the council? Are there any comments from the audience? Ron.
Ron Smolas, Fishery Survival Fund. Actually, this is a proactive AM that goes beyond window pane. I don't know whether that should be stated in the motion or not. This is proactive for all flatfish, including winter flounder, yellowtail, and summer flounder. So I just don't know whether that's important to state it or not.
Mary Beth?
Well, obviously, I'm not going to make any amendments to the committee motion. That certainly was discussed at the committee, and so I think it's worthwhile for Ron to mention it, and hopefully, I guess we're not going to technically have minutes of this meeting. It's an audio available, but it's on the record.
Are there any other comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Seeing none. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 14-001 with a recusal. Mary Beth.
So I just will mention at the bottom of slide 32, Dieter mentions a consensus statement by the committee that details are on page 45. It really is the mechanics of how the AM kicks in. This is consistent with how we do it in Yellowtail. So I'll just note that for people's reference. And that really, we have a few other items under other business, but that concludes our action on framework 25. And so I will make a motion that is not a committee motion. Actually, I guess I would, I'm not sure that I can make a motion. Normally the committee chair would make a motion to submit a framework, but since I'm recusing myself, I think I'm not allowed to make a motion. So I think, and our vice chair cannot make a motion either. So if somebody wants to make a motion to submit, I would appreciate that.
Dave Preble.
Yes, I will make the motion. And, yes.
Seconded by Laura.
Okay. I'll read it into the record. I'll move that the council submit Framework 25 to the Scallop FMP as amended at this meeting to the regional office for review and approval.
Okay, are there any further council comments? Drew.
Just briefly, I want to say thank you. I think this might be unprecedented that we pass everything by unanimous consent, basically. And I just wanted to thank the Scallop team of Deirdre, Travis, Peter, Emily, and everyone working really hard on putting together this document. And you can see how it really built consensus, and hope we can do this in the future. Thank you.
Hope you just didn't jinx the vote. Dave.
Yeah, I just wanted to put into the record that a good part of that success was the result of an outstanding effort by the AP. And I particularly appreciated that. And the committee, every single motion that you saw was passed unanimously by the committee.
Okay, without further debate, those council members who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. This motion passes 15-001 with one recusal. Karen, that was 14, I'm sorry. 14, one abstention, one recusal. And I do also want to follow up on both Dave's and Drew's comments and thank the committee, the PDT, and the AP. I mean, this is sort of unprecedented in the number of years I've been here to see unanimous votes all the way through the process. So good work, guys. Thanks. You got a couple recommendations, Mary Beth?
I do. The Scallop Committee, by consensus, is requesting the council to draft a letter. And it is in response to an AP motion, and the AP is requesting that NIMS add to paper and electronic VTRs a field for dredge type. And the options that they would suggest would be, you know, A, a standard New Bedford dredge, and B, a turtle-style dredge, and C, low profile, and D, other. And I think as, you know, some of the thinking as these modifications to the gear take place, that it would be useful to be starting to create a database that shows, you know, the outcomes and how that works. So if people around the table feel comfortable with that change, that would be a recommendation of the committee. And I would note that the AP motion on this was a unanimous vote by them.
Are there any comments from the council? Question from Tom.
This is just kind of a follow-up question, and maybe Bill Karp, who's not here, wants to weigh in on this. This seems like a good idea, but I'm just curious if there was any discussion at the committee about how adding additional gear types into the VTR codes or perhaps the observer database to identify specific gear types might affect the number of fishing modes under the SBRM, and the amount of observer coverage that would be required to meet the CV standard for new fishing modes. And I don't know if there was any discussion by anyone at the meeting that raised that issue.
That issue was not discussed, and obviously I think if it were up to me, that might be added to the letter, you know, if requesting feedback if there's a problem, would be my suggestion, because that was not contemplated, Tom, and I think that's a very good question.
Any other comments or questions? Are there any objections? Seeing none, letter will be submitted. Mary Beth?
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One last thing. I can sense it's a scallop committee request that the council consider drafting a letter, another letter, to NIMS requesting that they consider the ESA ruling on the chain mat line to be consistent with the turtle deflector dredge boundary. And so Drew brought this up yesterday, and, you know, having different lines, of course, one line is, you know, it's under ESA, not MSA, and the other one is through the FMP. And I can't remember exactly how close they are together. Deirdre perhaps could speak to it, but it does seem that for consistency and, you know, minimizing confusion in the fishery, it would be worthwhile to do. So, Deirdre, do you want to add anything to that?
Sorry, I don't have a figure to throw up there. The lines themselves are actually quite different. The 71 West is the vertical line I showed before. The turtle chain mat line is more of a horizontal. In the end, they end up impacting similar areas in terms of most of southern New England and the mid-Atlantic, but there is, you know, one portion of overlap that's different. I think all the points were made about consistency and so forth, and I believe the agency is just looking for a more formal request to look at this stuff from the council, and if we do that, then they could start that process more easily than, I think, without any input from the council or request from the council to kind of go through that again.
Are there any further questions or comments about this? Are there any objections? Okay. Seeing none, letter will be submitted. Is there any further business, Mary Beth?
No, I think that does it. I think we're all set.
Well, thank you all. We're running a little bit ahead of schedule in an unprecedented manner. So let's adjourn for lunch and be back at 1 o'clock.